This is HPR episode 1681 entitled New Year Show Part 8 of 8. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 218 minutes long. The summary is New Year Show Part 8 from 8:00 to 12:00.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Ah, there we go.
It is now 8:04, and I'm starting the stream, which I didn't cross. Thank you very much.
Actually, you probably should have stopped it before I started talking about being a cross trooper from a park and not wearing underwear. But if you know, by all means, I don't judge.
Ken, does the stream crash after X time?
No, I don't think so. It's it just makes it easier for me to edit.
Axel.
Yeah, you know what? Ken needs to hang out. Like, you'd showed up, you know, like, let's record, let's hang out. No, come on, Ken. Let's talk.
He was here earlier.
You talk.
No, he's not talking. Like, let's rock
Hold
and roll.
Hold on. Ken just woke up, man. Jeez, give him a chance to shake the cobwebs out of his head and have a cup of coffee. How are you, Ken?
I am fine, actually. We had the first night where the kids were... Normally, they go to bed and then we wake them up, but they decided they wanted to stay up. So that was really nice, as they say here.
You have kids? How old are they?
Yeah. They are 10, well, 10 coming on 11, 9, and 7.
Oh wow! Rough ages too.
Dr. Sisyphorn, Ken has always brought his kids on at midnight in the at GMT, and I can only think it's got to be because of you this time. He didn't.
They were so wrecked. They just had to go to bed. They never ever get to stay up this late. So. That's the real reason.
Some of us are pretty wrecked, Ken. It's a good thing you didn't bring him on.
There you go. So what have I missed?
We've been sliding closer and closer to a not safe for work label, but really compared to previous years, we've been pretty tame, though we have been talking about kilts and going regimental.
50, I think you blacked out for a bit. Ken, compared to Dev Random, we were fairly tame for a few minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say, we left the not safe for work designator behind several hours ago, and we don't know where the line is anymore.
Well, fuck this shit.
The line is, if it's of interest to hackers...
Yeah, fuck this rightness ass. Not safe for work, NSFW, we're fucking up.
Yeah, we can safely look out the shuttle window and see the line that we crossed.
Yeah, I just know
the
what
shuttle
I...
shuttle window, I thought we were looking at the, ISS from the moon or something.
When I passed out the first time, Mr. Webb was talking, about how good he was being, and he was not going to say anything, dirty, so I don't know what he did after, and I was gone for gotta be 2 hours and came back and I was gonna go to sleep. Said, no, I do not want, TJ and Pokey and all that to define the end of the show, so I jumped back in.
5150, I do want to point out that your story is fantastic because you start out by saying, when I passed out the first time. And whenever anyone starts out with that story, that's great. I passed out the first time, and follow that, it's great after that.
Oh, good Lord, in previous years, I passed out two or three times during the show and come back. I reference 330, who was in, you know, was in the in the chat, at least. I think he was in the recently in the Mumble, but last year it was like, well, usually I go over and walk across the driveway and see a movie with my buddy, you know. So, and now I'm in town.
Ron Jeremy's a great actor.
You know, so 10-mile drive. So it's like, you know, no, I told my buddy I'm not going to come over and see a movie this year and get drunk and then try to drive home. So, you know,
We spoke about this, 50. Driving and drinking. We don't do this.
I did not.
Very good man.
One hand on the penis, one hand on the wheel.
I mean, I went home to do work on the farm, and I came back, and then I started drinking, so,
very good. I'm going to go get some coffee, speaking of drinking.
But, in a normal year, I'm gone, and, you know, for a few hours in the evening, and I come back, and then I'm snockered, and I pass out, and like last year, I came back, you know, I think I woke up about 6 o'clock in the morning, and was on for a couple hours, and yeah, I was messed up. And Ken will tell you, he was back on like, oh, at 3:30, I heard you. In the stream, it, you know, 3:30 was talking to Ken Fallon about 10 o'clock the next morning. And so, yeah, 5150 was in here about 8 o'clock in the morning, and he was drunk as a skunk.
Like now.
I am not. No. This here is not a patch on how screwed up I was, because, you know, I got up at 6 o'clock and started drinking again. So no, I'm nowhere near that.
We have a word for that in the Northeast. We call that alcoholism.
Well, I should certainly hope so. I would think there was a reason I keep buying all this alcohol.
Or consumerism. You know, we go either way.
You know, Pokey, you brought the word alcoholic. I'm not at all afraid of saying that. I would like to think I'm an expert in something.
You know what, 5150? I think you and I are going to be great friends.
Well, as long as you don't give me crap for wearing skirts, I think so.
I don't care that you're wearing a skirt. You know, you've got a skirt, I've got a mouth. Let's rock and roll.
Look, you can wear a skirt, just don't call it a pocket dungeon.
Let's roll the dice, baby. Let's see if it's a skirt or a fucking kilt.
Tell you, as long as you don't call it a hot pocket peg wall.
You know, if it wasn't already copyrighted, that'd be my million-dollar idea.
Hot pocket.
Well, as many as you've consumed, shouldn't you have like a lifetime security in that?
Dude, I cannot eat those things. They mess my stomach up something terrible.
Oh, they burn my mouth.
Oh, you know what, dude? I'll beat you guys on the hot pocket thing. I've subsisted on AM/PM food, Arco food for like the last year. I have not shit right for the past year. So, anyone that's had that similar experience, by all means, kick in.
Are they burning something down over at your place?
Well, something's burning down in my frickin' colon, yeah?
No, it sounds like you've got a riot in the background.
Oh, no, and actually, the girlfriend's watching a Jersey Shore shit, so that might explain it.
You have a girlfriend?
Yeah. All
sorry,
right.
I didn't mean it to say.
Oh that yeah, way. No, yeah, okay.
Yes, and, he did. Yes,
no,
he
actually,
did. Yeah,
it
see,
sucks
that's kind of like
by
that.
The way.
You know, you see that would not be my strategy. The girl, the girlfriend is sitting next to me and saying, yeah, it sucks to have a girlfriend.
No, she's in the room. It's fine. At least I think she is. I don't know where the fuck she's at.
Well, if she hears you talking like that, I know where she'll be. Packing her shit and leaving.
Or packing your shit and making you leave. Definitely, before I made a statement like that, I would swivel my head around.
Nah, you know, good sense of humor and everything. I hope so, actually. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah, that's what Pegwall and 330 say, but they're living separately.
How's she doing? She's single? Oh, no, it's okay, sweetheart. Sorry.
He stopped putting out, so I had to move.
And now you have ceiling snakes.
It's not one thing, it's another.
How's the frozen pipes this year, Pegwell? You doing a little better that way?
Yeah, the pipes are good so far, and so's the furnace. So I'm hoping they hold out.
In other words, Pegwell's keeping the fires burning.
We're all hoping they hold out for you, man.
We're talking frozen. You got to start singing the song.
Let's have no, busted pipes in the kitchen this year.
Well, you can sing a song about the crazy lady that steals the strawberries.
The fuck, are you high?
What?
Don't you have a crazy lady comes over and steals your strawberries?
Yeah, she also yells at squirrels and, actually, she did do something new recently. She ever so nicely and politely had some people come over and, like, remove some plants in my yard she didn't like the look of, and one of them happened to be a peach tree. So now I'm deprived of strawberries and peaches. I'm going to die from, like, scurvy or something.
You have a crazy lady that comes and steals strawberries.
And trees, apparently. Man, yeah, somebody stole my peach tree. I would be kind of upset.
Where were your guns in this process?
No, it wasn't in December. It was actually, like, closer to fall, but the peach tree wasn't really big enough to get anything good off of. It was one of those just kind of stare at it and go, you know, a couple years, that boy's going to be awesome.
Cobra 2, don't forget, Pegwall's legally sexy. He can't actually hit her with a gun.
He can if she gets close enough. He can swing that thing around.
Yeah, you know, if you take pictures like he can, I think he can probably hit the average center mass with a firearm.
Into the country, I'm going to eat a lot of peaches. Moving to the tree.
That's enough. Copyright.
Kill it, dude. Yeah, you're going to get us sued.
And Pegwell has to use a scope just to see the end of his barrel.
Oh, come on. I only played like a freaking five seconds, so come on.
Is that like a euphemism?
Have you not seen his camera? It's got a scope on it.
I gotta use a scope to see the end of mine, too, but I don't know if we're talking about the same thing.
You can say what you want, Lord D, but at least I'm not a grown man wearing a skirt.
Hey, I'm down with that.
No, I had this conversation with one of my friends who's a volunteer firefighter and came out to the fire. And, of course, my 400-plus rounds of Russian ammunition all fired off, and I had it in the attic. If I'd been thinking, I would have put it in the basement. But it was all pop, 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 pop. But Thanksgiving, I talked to my friend who's in the fire department. He says it's not that. It's, you know, the cans of starting fluid in the pickups, you know, because they will take off and fly the ether. And I said, yeah, if my pickup ever catches on fire, you got to get the one in the seat that I left there. You got to get the one behind the seat. You got to get the one under the seat. You know, it's like your pickup's going to burn to the ground, dude.
How much is your retainer, man?
Retainer?
Your retainer for your frickin' attorney.
Oh, we don't have those out here.
Son of a bitch. Fucking I hate California.
No, if you need a retainer, they just haul your ass off to jail.
Like, we actually need that shit out here. If you're doing anything that might even be considered on the fence, you need a retainer.
Like that episode of Sliders.
It's a dichotomy. It's, you know, you either got to have enough lawyers or enough guns.
Yeah, that's the show I was trying to think of earlier to mention.
Sliders? Yeah, good call.
Yeah, good one, Pegwell. It's only 6 hours later.
Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah, I awesome. Actually remembered you know,
what, that. You yeah, can scroll hell? Back through the show notes. It'll only take you 5 minutes and carpal tunnel syndrome.
So, you know, is that sliders like this? Slimy hamburgers you get?
Oh, Jesus. Now we're full on Jeopardy here. Okay. I'm trying to think of a Jeopardy question. We'll see what's going to happen.
Jeopardy doesn't have questions. They have answers.
Oh, goddamn kudos.
All I remember from Sliders is that Jeffrey O'Connell were the main character in that, and he was on a show, and he's like, no, you've got to use your popularity to get as much tail as you can while you can.
Okay, so we got Jerry Wire down. That's cool. All right, so, all right, okay, here's the Jeopardy question. Everyone, want to chime in here? This is the artist that sung in Rocky IV, Living in America. Go.
I just have that song playing in my head. I have no interest in knowing who the hell did it, but
you know the song. That's good.
That's good. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I hear who is James Brown?
Oh, it's a ding, 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 ding. Come on, got the, yeah, James Brown, cape comes out, Apollo Creed gets killed, Rocky IV, awesome, yeah. Somebody play that, because I can't, I want to listen to it, but I can't pipe it through because I don't have the audio cable set up, so someone fucking play that.
You don't have the permission to play it either.
Yeah, that's copyright.
You're going to get sued, just go to YouTube if you want to hear it.
Oh, Jesus Christ, I freaking hate legality.
So do we. That's why we don't mess with it.
Well, you're the guy with the retainer.
I have a retainer, but not over that shit. Retainer in case I get sued for releasing patient information, not copyright stuff. Out.
See, everybody who's listening to this is already playing that song in their head.
Yeah, no. So everyone already knows it. Okay, who wants to sing it? Okay, come on.
I'll sing it.
Living
Join
in America.
Us now and share the software. You'll be free, hackers.
You know, I heard a dog giving birth one time that sounded just like that.
Well, that's twice
Fuck
today.
Fuck you, that was me.
That's twice today you've made me can do that.
You know how I get paid to sing? Well, technically I get paid not to sing.
Get paid to take it up the ass. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to say that.
No, it's not fair. No. I can't sing. My dad could sing. You know, he used to get paid to sing at, like, funerals and stuff.
No shit, really? Wow.
Yeah, my mom used to get paid to sing at funerals. She'd just hang out at the funeral home hoping somebody was dead and then go sing for them.
Near, far, wherever you are.
I'm sorry, I don't know that song.
Yeah, that fell flat. That was me drinking and not paying attention.
So what?
No, I cannot carry a 2 and 5 gallon bucket, but my dad could. And I expect Ken, he could probably do pretty good if I did not accompany him, but I'm too enthusiastic.
I have been known to sing from time to time, yes. That's the last line of my resume.
That you've been known to sing?
Yeah, that way when they complain to HR, I can just refer to that line in the document.
You guys probably don't know this, but I'm a professional wassler.
Do you go wassling?
Yeah, no, I need to hear this. Like, if you're a professional wassler, you have to hit us up.
Look, the police said it was public exposure, but I say it's professional wassling.
There's police that say professional exposure in pedophilia. I don't give a crap. I want to hear what you have to say right now. Let's sing it. If you're that good where you're a professional wassler, I need to hear it.
Look, what I'm getting at is I'm an alcoholic and I pee on people's trees.
And I want to hear it.
Meanwhile, I'm Googling what Wassler is.
No, but Peg, only alcoholics.
I thought alcoholics were people who went to meetings. Pegwell, I can't see you finding the door to go to a meeting.
Wassling is where you sing carols and you go pee on people's trees, and it was an old belief that doing so brought other people good luck, and people would pay you in beer and food to continue doing it for everybody.
Except the peeing on trees part that he just made up this minute.
How do you spell Wassler?
Remember the song,
Here We Come, a Wassling Along the
G-O-O-G-L-E. Yeah, we got that.
Yeah, but TJ, you're not supposed to break into people's houses and pee on their trees.
But it's cold outside.
All right, from the Urban Dictionary.
Baby, it's cold outside.
The tradition of singing calls door-to-door, an ancient tradition that exists of going door-to-door for Christmas. For Wassel, if you can't provide Wassel for humble, tattered minstrels, you gotta turn over your credit card and PIN number immediately. Or option 3, a refreshing, great-tasting beverage that comes in cans. Enjoy the great taste of Wassel in cans.
Does it mention Ken peeing on people's trees?
There's a distinct lack of that at the moment, but no doubt somebody is busy editing it as we speak.
Well, I think somebody should, you know, attach that to, you know, drinking from a can somehow.
I think we all need to sing something. We could do some karaoke. Who can? I don't want to like do audio cable piping through. Can we do any way you want it? I don't care. Come on.
No, we can't do that, but we can do
Old Lang Syne.
No, I was going to say we should do the hacker song.
We can do that at the end. Wassel, according to the Oxford dictionaries, is a spiced ale or mulled wine drunk during celebrations for the Twelfth Night and Christmas Eve. A mighty bowl of wassel in which the apples were hissing and bubbling. So that's from the OxfordDictionaries.com.
So, TJ, are your apples hissing, bubbling?
I'm not going to lie. If there's like a hot alcoholic drink with like apples and stuff in it, that sounds pretty fantastic.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm going to go service the children, and then I'll probably bring them out here. So if you could take this from whatever to wherever, that would be super.
Wherever to wherever. This is going to go bad.
No. If you guys screw up in front of kids, I'm kicking you out of the room.
Pokey, calm down. No one's doing that. What I kind of want to hear is Ken has that great voice here. I kind of want to hear, we kind of want to hear a Christmas tale from Ken.
Yeah, just backing up Pokey there. He's not the only one who can kick people out, then. He's not the only one with kids.
Got him here. They're 15. So, but I kind of want to hear Ken kind of do the,
Although, just on a side note, we're not kicking anyone out because this is quite clear we don't moderate people.
We do have consideration.
Yeah, well, that's definitely not to bring my children into a room where I'm not. It's my responsibility as a parent. Yeah, so it's not going to be an issue, guys. I have no doubt that you will all behave when they're coming on. But if I felt that you weren't going to respect that, I wouldn't bring them on in the first place. And that's the onus is on me to ensure that that doesn't happen. Yeah, the rules are marked.
My hat's off to Ken for being, you know, a parent in the modern age who is willing to take responsibility for such things instead of expecting, everyone else to have that responsibility for him.
Well, actually, what I do is we have this thing where, I think I probably told you this before, where they have to learn to curse properly. So they're allowed to use certain words in the house. Certain words are banned, but you know they have to get the pronunciation correct.
Bugger? Is bugger one of the words?
No, I don't use bugger myself. Bugger, because
booger,
you know,
bugger.
Are you trying to tell me that I enjoy anal intercourse? Or are you saying I got something in my nose? It's too difficult for me to enunciate. I think if you're going to curse, you shouldn't have to worry about. You shouldn't be that concerned about your enunciation.
No, correct. So, what words do you?
Maybe
hit
the
up?
Advanced course. I don't know. You know, what annoys me on the train actually is when teenagers are saying, yeah, "Fuck it, you fucker." I go, "No, it's fuck. It's not fuck." So.
Thank you. It's not a double O. Come on.
Well, Ken, you do have a version of it that you say. Yeah, I've heard you say. What is it?
Feck.
Feck, yes.
Feck comes from Father Ted, so that's why I say feck quite a lot. It's a bit like the frack word on Battlestar Galactica.
I actually really respect Ken on this moment because, you know, everyone wants to say about, oh, we can't say this word, that word. Ken's concerned about, like, look, you're mispronouncing this curse word. Like, stop it.
This
is how you say the F word.
The kids on the train get very embarrassed when I make them repeat it over and over again and tell them that they have to write it out 10 times.
Well, Ken,
that is adorable.
Ken, you'll be interested to know I've gone from being way too low. Now they tell me to wrap my microphone around the back of my head.
No, I think everything's just fine. Everything's just fine. 50, just as a by-the-by, I must say how impressed I am that you were able to carry, you guys were able to carry the first few hours of the show. So, well done to you.
Apparently you haven't listened to the first few hours of the show.
He's done a hell of a job. He has done a hell of a job. Kudos to 50.
Well, gentlemen,
I'd also like to give a big shout out to Kevin Wisher at this point as well for all the support that he's given.
He's in the channel. I don't know why. He's muted. He's recording. Okay, he's probably went to bed.
He's high. He's high. That's
he's annoyed with me because I turned off a stream at the beginning. There's now an official feud between our two families.
Well, gentlemen, I'll catch you all a little later on.
Check. Take care, Lord.
Yeah, good man. Good talk to you, Lord D.
Hope this is going to be better than the last one.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yep. Thanks, everyone. Take it sleazy.
Yeah, man. It's great Adios. Talking to you, Lord Dragon Blue. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you know, keep trucking because the next year is going to be good if you're in it.
Later on.
God, I hate that guy. No, actually, I don't. I have no idea who he is, but I just always want to say that when someone leaves. Lord, well, he seems like a great guy. I just always want to be like, God, I hate that guy.
He's like an original podcaster. That's the one guy you do not want to be, you know, making jokes about.
Nah, I'll screw with him. It doesn't matter. If he's an original podcaster, he can take a joke on the, oh, God, he left. Okay, now we're cracking jokes. It's fine. He seems like a cool guy.
I'm here.
Okay, I'm going to get a coffee refuel back in a moment.
I mean, Dr. Seuss,
I gotta say,
if it was not for Lord D and some guys like him, you would not be talking on this channel now.
I appreciate that, man, and I have definite respect there. I'm trying to hit up some different... I've actually got my own Mumble stuff going on, trying to hit up a podcast of my own, but, you know how that goes. It's all about needing talent and, you guys kick ass, so it's why I'm here.
Well, I mean, the great thing, while we're talking about HPR, is, you can do a podcast, but you don't have the pressure to do one every single week. You're not paying for hosting. No, I mean, it's great if people want to go out and say, I want to do my own thing. I want to do a podcast. I want to, build followers, whatever. If you can do that more, you know, way more power to you. But, you know, this is just the excellent thing about HPR. You know, it, well, you know, it, in a way, it's kind of, what are those things where they, you know, they start a small business in a cubicle or whatever, you know, it's kind of like that for podcasters. And if you, you know, if you want to expand beyond that and do your own podcast, that's great.
Right.
Incubator. That's what I'm thinking of. Incubator, you know, for businesses, you know, and usually you want to stay there a couple of years, but you know, with HPR, you know, if you want to get your voice out there, but you don't want to just say, oh, I'm going to throw it up there and do my hosting and hope somebody listens to me. You know, HPR is just the excellent way to do it. And I would not be on, without HPR, would not be on other podcasts that I've been invited to. You know, the first place people heard me was, as part of a group, would be the you know, Hacker Public Radio, the community news that we do each month. And Pokey could tell me I'm right or wrong, but you know, I'm certain that was why I got invited to Dev Random, is Pokey was on me with those with me, and you know, heard me on there and said, yeah, 50's a guy we could probably use. So that was, you know, Dev Random was the first more than one host, other community news podcast that I was on. And that led to other things like those channels, KPO, Colonel Panic podcast. And, you know, I kind of grabbed an opportunity, you know, Pier 64. We haven't had Peter, I don't think this, Peter 64 said, oh man, we don't have any hosts. Does anybody want to jump on? And I took that as an opportunity. It's, you know, and I had been providing stories to, for a while, to Colonel Panic. So it wasn't like I jumped on and they didn't know who the heck I was, but, you know, I took that as an invitation. And proactively and jumped on, and you know, I'm still on that podcast, and I was hanging around in Linux Basics and you know and other IRC channels, and people still get together and say, yeah, you know, Linux Basics is kind of done. We need to do, you know, we need to reintegrate, do, you know, start another podcast, and that's how I wound up on Linux Lugcast. And this is kind of an introduction. I need to come up with a more formal idea. We are going to have in March a Kansas Linux Fest.
And, oh, nice.
And I, you know, I do want to do a paper, and it's going to be like how to get your sorry ass on a podcast. And so,
you know. So we got the title, right? How to get your sorry ass on a podcast. I mean, that's pretty damn good. I got to say that. That's like a book, a white paper. We're talking. That's good.
Pretty much. I mean, they put out stuff for papers, but I think, you know, and I procrastinate. I need to do something, but, yeah, I'm going to get on there. I'm certainly going to run up there and for 2 days and do the conference.
All right, folks, I'm going to head out and get some sleep.
Take care, Chaser, man.
See you, Soundy.
Happy New Year, Sound Chaser. Have a good night, man.
You too, guys.
Take care.
Well, this year's certainly been different. I mean, early this morning, I was, you know, hoping for participation because kind of like, you know, there's only two people in the room talking. It was like, it's kind of hard to keep stuff going. It's like, man, I can't step away because then there'll be dead air. And we got three people going, and then, yeah, about mid-morning, boom, it took off. And it's like the typical New Year's podcast. You can't get a word in edgewise.
Well, yeah. Well, you're alive right now, man. You're hitting it up here in, well, granted, everyone else has hit up New Year's except frickin' Hawaii, but you're alive to everyone right now.
Well, you gotta remember, we hit the international dateline, and there's, you know, there's places on the other side of it that still, you know, there are places that jumped, you know, kind of jumped the fork over, you know, on the other side, and there's people on this side. No, we want to be last.
I say, you know what? We got, I'm on the Pacific, got, you know, what is it, 17 minutes left? I should probably go on webcam here and we say, yeah, you know what? If you're around in 17 minutes for your new year, wherever you're at, I'm taking my shirt off. I'm a guy, I'm unattractive, but let's rock and roll.
I'm confused. You mean you're not naked now?
From the waist down, but that's, you know, you can't see it.
That's, you know, dude, that's not the most confidence-building thing that you could say. Oh, I'm naked from the waist down, but you can't see it.
Okay, well, I'm waked. Waked. Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, I'm naked from the shaft up. How about that?
That could work. You know, you got to understand the group you're in. You know, like TJ, he hasn't worn pants since 1985.
No, I'm allergic.
Well, to be fair, I mean, 1985 was a bad year for pants. So we all understand that.
We're probably not making Ken very confident that he can bring his kids home.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, I forgot he was going to come on here. Dang it. Oops.
Ken, if you're listening, we promise to be good, but we can't guarantee a very wide window.
I can do everything I can, and I promise I'm not going to say anything. Come on, Ken. I can say I won't say anything. Just don't have look at the bite my name. That's all I ask.
Probably Ken's kids have been listening, and he's got to peel them off the ceiling right now.
Oh, fuck it then.
His kids are going, they're not cursing right.
Fook it. How many people can say cunt the right proper way? Like, I say cunt, it sounds like it's dirty. If it's English, it sounds like Aristotle. It's like, oh, you cunt. This is inappropriate.
You're probably not reinforcing Ken's resolve to bring his kids on right now.
No, I know I'm not, but he wasn't showing up beforehand, so I kind of figured he wasn't paying attention.
So, TJ, what is 330's deal? You know, I've seen him in the IRC, and I haven't heard him this year. I guess he's got crappy bandwidth.
Yeah, the internet at his house is not the most solid.
Well, it's too bad, because somebody has to come and be a check for me when I get, you know, completely out of hand later this morning.
Where is he? Is he in the U.S.? Is he in, like, where is he?
He is in the worst possible town in America.
Oh, damn it. Yeah, St. Louis. I knew it.
Nope.
Boston.
No, me and him live in the same town. Like, I actually met the guy when I started college, and that's how we became friends.
What are the odds of that? Give me a region. Where are you at?
Use your words. We both live in Indiana.
Indianapolis is the city, so I'm guessing that's not where you're at.
No.
So Midwest, Indianapolis, or Indiana, you know what, that's the only city I know. Where are you at?
Well, I gave a nice clue earlier about the high school that Jim Jones went to.
Oh yeah, Jonesville. Yeah, that's a great city. Yeah,
no, we both live in Richmond. There's a population of like almost 40,000 people.
So when you leave, they like change like the
frickin' sign says 39,999 because you left when you go on vacation.
There's just one sad old little shriveled up man going, dang it, lost another.
No, but only 20,000. I know that guy. Only 20,000 of them have their teeth left.
Oh, I didn't even go there. That wasn't me.
That was like, that was like a meth joke. I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you.
Did you say thank you for that? That was a meth joke.
Yeah, thank you. I thought it was, why, because they're all old, or their teeth have fallen out, or the bad food. Okay. Thank you for explaining the joke.
No, it was a meth joke. It was a meth joke, inbred joke. It was a lot of America joke wrapped into one.
Don't be started on Brit jokes, so.
Oh, we can't hit Brit jokes?
And Ken, you know, would probably reject me even saying anything like that. So he's in a good part of Europe.
You'll insult his delicate Welsh sensibilities.
Exactly.
Okay. Now I do have to ask this question. Did he say Welsh? Okay, so he's not really Welsh. Well then I'll back off. There we go.
I mean, the man's name is Fallon. You know, it's not hard to. You know, I'm sorry, Ken, but that pretty much is a giveaway to nationality.
Seriously?
Yeah, we automatically guess you're frickin' Indian, Eastern Indian. Like that's your name. Welsh is dot on the forehead Indian.
Yeah, you and Fab.
Hell yeah! Yep,
exactly.
I'm sorry if I'm not right, but if somebody says Fallon, you know, I would immediately flash Irish.
If someone says Fallon, I inherently not funny, and everyone else in this channel should think the same thing.
Yeah, and you know, my name should be without the English prescriptions. My name should be McGregor. And, from that, anybody would be able to pick out nationality.
How did you guess McGregor from 50?
you might be the only one, around here that hasn't grokked my real name recently. Or, if the NSA wanted to come and find me, I'm certain they could have done it without any help. The real name is Greer, which is a sept of the McGregor clan.
Mm-hmm. What's your first name, Bob?
Don.
Don? Your first name is Don?
Yeah, I think that's an accident, but you probably couldn't get more Celtic.
Tis true. Oh, this is freaking me out, 50. You'll always be 50 to me. I'll be out one.
And now, having totally added myself to the NSA.
Just let me add that to the show notes.
No, are we really... No. Okay, are we recording this?
Yeah, oh, heck yes. Recording.
It's going out in the live stream,
son of a bitch. Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
What do you think all those red dots are for? What do you think if you hover over the channel that says warning, this is all released under Creative Commons licensing and streamed live?
Okay, so I want to go on record.
Welcome to Hacker Public Radio, bud.
It's Hacker Public Radio, so I gotta give a nice public announcement here. This is Dr. Seuss of Porn. We're gonna have a nice conversation here. There's been some jokes made. We've had some good times. We've made pedophilia jokes. We've made bestiality jokes. But they're all jokes. The catch is, Dr. Seuss of Porn is not behind any of them. I don't believe in that. Now, everyone else in the channel, everyone else in HPR, I don't know what they stand behind. They believe in bestiality. I don't like your announcements at all.
Yeah, like, you know, like, this is why I took exception when you were bagging on guilt. Like I said, If it were not for the bloody English, my name would be McGregor. But if you do not know the history of the English clan, twice in Scottish history, the English came around and said, these McGregors are making so much trouble, we are going to make it illegal for them to call themselves McGregor, and anybody who goes by the name of McGregor, we are going to hang.
What I want to say
is, that's why my name is history
of the world, McGregor is paramount for violence. What we do is we take axes and we execute people. Now, we don't screw around. We're completely, violently, brutally honest. And we just chop people's heads off.
This
Thank
segment
you.
Of today, This Week in Horror, was brought to you by Dr. Seuss of Porn.
Well, actually, he's not typically wrong. There was there were some British taxmen that, you know, McGregor sent their heads back.
50.
I kind of want to do some, if we can do some, like public, I need to do some, like public radio announcements here. We can do some, like, you know, the more you know announcements. Like, hey, look, you might get your head chopped off. Thank you. Goodbye. Yeah. Bye.
And, you know, the mortal enemies of the McGregors were the Campbells, because the British came in and they... You know, Campbell's, I think, originally came from England. They said, you know, all these places the McGregors had, they said, no, the British Crown said, we're going to give them to the Campbells.
Oh, buddy. I think that makes us mortal enemies.
Don't even start with the Campbells. This goes down a bad path. I mean, anytime you want to bring up humps.
So, you know,
I'm related to a lot of Campbells.
I'm against soup and, you know, and... Poor Glenn, you know, with his mind all messed up, you know, mortal enemies. So, TJ, you're a Campbell?
How you send that around. That was good. That was, like, out of nowhere. So, son of a bitch, you're a Campbell. Okay, cool.
Well, I'm not, but my cousins are.
Well, you know, long as they don't pull a claymore on me, you know, we can get along.
Well, I'm going to smoke a Camel, so guys, I'll be back soon.
Give up smoking. I've done an episode. You'll find it on HPR.
Okay, and, please don't stop smoking. That's... Oh, no, wait. Oh, Ken, are you the one talking with your kids there?
No, I'm talking to you directly. Smoking is bad, and you will die. If you die, then we have one less hacker in the world.
Okay, but you smoked before, right?
Oh, God, yes.
So we're not faulting someone based on, like, I enjoy it, right? We're not going, like, on a, I don't understand it, correct?
There will be a day, probably, where, you know, I'm in the doctor's office and he goes, Ken, I've got some bad news. You're terminally ill. Just one moment, doctor, while I nip down to the canteen and buy a 20-pack of cigarettes. Okay, what were you saying?
Well, and I've always stood behind this, is, you know, we deal with people at work all the time that have lung cancer, and they're like, we give them the news where it's like, you got 2 months to live, and then they say, well, I'm stopping smoking. And my mind is, you're dying in 2 months. Why are you stopping now? Just freaking go for it. I mean, really, I wouldn't stop. So, okay, no, good to know we're on the same mindset.
Kudos. Yeah, but in fairness, I have done an episode. It is difficult to give up smoking, so basically, yeah, go tune that out. And in relation to all the porn stuff that was done, there has been a few episodes on porn.
Ooh, episodes, I like that.
From both sides of the fence. So, again, if you're listening to this show and you disagree with anything anyone has said and would like to offer up another opinion or would like to offer clarifications, then the whole point of this New Year's show is to get new people recording episodes. And what a better way to do that than start a feud toing and froing where you'll be sending in lots of episodes. So please do that.
I miss smoking.
Yes, yes. And if you hate me by any means necessary, I'm Dr. Seuss of Porn at yahoo.com. Feel free to send me emails. And I'm going to keep being the IRC channel, and we're going to keep contributing.
Well,
let's do this in the public.
No, it probably killed, but I kind of wanted to see if anyone would send it.
Well, you know, in the spirit of creating new episodes, if you're, you know, Pegwall, if any of your goddamn cousins would, you know, would...
If you're Pegwall, goddamn, God, I want
would like to contribute an episode, you know, and continue the feud, I'm more than willing.
I've actually tried to get them to record things. Like, I was like, look, you speak into the microphone, I will handle the rest of it. But they just go, eh, I don't want to, I don't have anything to talk about. I'm like, dude, it's not that hard. I mean, considering I haven't put up an episode in a long time, yes, I know, Ken, go ahead and say it.
I don't judge. I just get very, very disappointed.
just tell him it's fucking Bobby Joshua Campbell.
Possibly.
Okay, 50. Okay, so you got the accent going on. You and I are simpatico, but let's do a little improv here. Where are you from, man?
South Central Kansas.
South Central Kansas. Okay, so, guessing you're a little bit on the NRA side, correct?
I have guns.
You have guns? Holy shit. Okay. Yeah, NRA guns. All right. Well, I mean,
profile people? You're working for the government.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Come on. I'm trying to improv here. But by the way, I think
Dr. Sissa Ford is in the NSA.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm right up there with Penn Jillette. You know, we're all hitting that up. Damn it. You totally spoiled my improv moment.
Good job. Understand me, my house at the end of July burned down. I had gun. Now I have guns.
Understand, you didn't have a house. Now you have debris.
Exactly. I can show you debris pictures.
Exactly.
No, and now he has large clump art supplies.
See, this is where I'm wondering, because I'm kind of new, and I kind of want to take little jabs here, but I don't want to piss anyone off. But I think it is kind of funny that I just heard he got hit by a tornado, and he has guns now. There is an interesting aspect there.
Well, that came about because Black Friday, Walmart had 20% off all their firearms.
Okay, so we are doing full-on Larry the Cable Guy situation here. Okay. No, I just had to make sure. Like, I wanted to make sure we weren't serious here. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I couldn't resist just one shotgun, so I got two. The old place that burned down, I saw it again the other day, I think, but he goes, I don't have any cats with furry tails, but saw a damn skunk, and it wasn't afraid of me appropriately, and I thought, man, I need to get rid of this sick skunk. So I bought, like, this Mossberg 22, but because of the government, you can't buy any 22 ammo, so I've had this rifle for 2 months I can't buy ammo for.
Why can't you buy ammo?
Because the government is buying it all. No, that's the... I mean, that's the rumor for a while, for the past year, Ken. Here in the United States, you couldn't buy ammo for anything.
Pepe Le Pew is now the Secretary of State, by the way. That's why.
Close enough. But
thank you. Jesus Christ. I tried to get it like a nice rim job. Oh, God. Did I say rim job? I meant, you know, rim shot.
Rim shot, yes. But 22 ammo is still scarce all over the United States for some reason. I can't imagine why the Obama administration wants 22 ammo, but you just can't find the stuff. Other stuff is finally showing up on the shelf. But, I mean, us paranoid people have been blaming Obama for a year because we haven't been able to get ammo. It's like the, everybody's been saying the the NSA and the administration for disasters or whatever has been buying up ammo so citizens can't.
FEMA?
FEMA, exactly, yes.
Seriously?
I was saying the CDC. I mean, I had bets on the CDC, so yeah, kudos.
I mean, it's the same people saying, you know, they're bringing back all these attack trucks from Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, the big Navistars with the holes on the bottom to deflect bombs and all that, like we've been talking about. And they've got running around down in Missouri now, and it's like, why do the cops have these, you know, have these explosion-resistant trucks? It can't be against...
It's to protect the children.
Oh, yeah, right. It can't be against insurgents. It can't be against gang members. The only reason is if they want to go door to door and
Happy New Year
on a citizen.
Oh shit! Shit.
Yeah, 5 minutes late. Who did we miss?
Oh, I don't know. I was just fucking yelling shit. I don't know what I'm doing.
Who just switched?
Merry Kwanzaa. What the hell?
We're at just past 9 o'clock
UTC.
Yes, exactly.
Alaska, French Polynesia, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Alaska, and
Guam. Ken's on top of this one.
Well, you know, I put that in my spreadsheet, and I still got off an hour someplace. I gather earlier today, I heard you, Ken, reading some of my notes, so you must have been able to import them.
These are the notes on the spreadsheet? Did somebody paste them into the Etherpad?
It must have been. I heard you say guns, 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 and that was mine earlier.
Yeah, somebody also filled those in on the Etherpad.
No. To be fair, that was Ken trying to assassinate someone in Britain. I don't want to say who it was. I can't say that, because he's going to be put in jail if I did say that, but that was what he told me earlier.
No, if we're going to assassinate anybody, we're going to throw them in the Flying Rich's pool.
Okay, so we're just killing fucking everyone. All right, okay, cool. I'm down with that. Okay, so we're down overthrowing governments. Okay, cool.
That doesn't solve anything. How are dead people going to be able to submit shows to HPR?
I did not suggest we do it. I'm just saying, I do want to point out
that I have almost 10 episodes in the can that are submitted at set intervals over the next couple months. So so if I die, they will still go. Not that I plan that out, but you know, it just happens.
If they're not on the FTP server, they're not shows.
They're gonna upload. I have automation done, so I have my FTP, well, not my FTP server, but I have certain stuff done at intervals. Namely, turning off lights and feeding the cats.
Let me just go and reset the FTP password for upload.
Oh, crap! Well, there I go. There's my immortality right there. Like, I got 2 episodes, or 3, and now I'm screwed.
No, I look forward to hearing your episodes, because as Jay said, Dr. Seuss, you have the most epic handle we've ever heard.
No, you know what? I appreciate that, and the thing is I was mild about, I always wanted to do the podcast, things like that, HBR, but then when I started recording them, and then I heard that my handle was recorded and said, well, you got a great handle. I was very surprised, because I've always had it, and it's just a handle. And you know what? Kudos to you guys for loving it. And kudos to me for being a twisted freak, I guess.
See, if you lie to Ken Fallon about the amount of shows you have ready, you owe him twice that.
Well, I have 7 in the bank.
And we love that, you know. And Ken Fallon will go down and tell his children, You know, I have a new friend I want you to meet. He's named Dr. Sisyphorn.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God.
Yeah? And?
Okay. Come on. Let's interview each other.
Probably in the Netherlands, porn doesn't mean anything, you know, doesn't mean the same thing.
Well, the Netherlands, there's this view that the Netherlands is this happy, happy land where everybody does porn and, you know, drinks and smokes weed and does drugs and all sorts.
But Bukkake.
In actual fact, it is not that time. That is me. One sec.
The government censored him.
Yes, exactly. But the Netherlands itself is quite a conservative country, and they're just, I've said it before and I'll say it again, they're just quite pragmatic about stuff. You will always have prostitution, so therefore you control it. You will always have, you know, the government said, well, the judiciary said, we're not going to prosecute people for having whatever grams of weed because it's a complete waste of money when there's real crimes out there. And then the police said, well, if you're not going to prosecute them, we're not going to arrest them. So that's where that law came out of. So, but otherwise, like, people follow, a lot of people go to church several times on a Sunday. They observe the holidays. They're very upstanding citizens and, you know, also would sort of look down their nose at people doing weed and that sort of stuff. So, just so you know.
Well, you know, I've got one in the can. I think I'm going to re-record, but I mean, my take on what podcast do you listen to is going to be what YouTube channels you listen to. And there's a guy who's interesting, you know. One thing is, you know, what is the difference between England and Great Britain and the British Commonwealth and all that? And then another one he did is, you know, what's the difference between the Netherlands and Holland? And he explained that, you know, Holland is really, there's a north and a south, and those are really just provinces.
He has done a fantastic, I know the guy, he's also done one on the Vatican Church. The amount of research that goes into one of those episodes is phenomenal. Brilliant idea for a series 50, but I need to see it on the server, thank you.
Yeah, I record it once, and I, you know, if there's stuff I wanted to change, it's going to be easier to re-record than it is to edit it. But yeah, that's that same guy. It's like, what do you have to do to become the King of England? What do you have to do to become a Pope?
Yes, very good. I like it. I like it a lot. By the way, yeah, actually, I do that quite a lot with some episodes. Just record it roughly once and then re-record it again with the record it as I'm walking somewhere with my sounds out. Just then it's down and out, and then completely re-record it again. But that's a good episode.
Well, and it's gonna...
just one thing. If you do have episodes lined up, you can always post them automatically on the server for future dates, anything out to a year. If you want to do it further out than that, email admin@hackapublicradio.org.
Yeah, there's the calendar, and you know, like I've mentioned, these three episodes I had recorded, I was going to, you know, this one we were right, you know, didn't have anything. I was going to throw them out there, and then my laptop died, which was actually fortuitous because that gave the community time to step up. Otherwise, you know, HPR would have become, you know, the 5150 talking out of his butt podcast.
Well, as I said in the community news, your episodes were very enjoyable and brought a lot to the... By the way, ignore that guy. That is a hackman that I was trying to get, but... Well, I'll unmute him, hold on. The ACK command, I wanted to have eSpeak read out those things at a particular time, but because the terminal was an hour ahead, anytime I put in 1,000 hours, it flipped it back to the following day. So what you're getting now is all the stuff that I put in to the VPS 24 hours ago, so apologies for that.
No, and my apologies. Well, I can probably work on it. I didn't get back as soon as I thought. I can work on it tomorrow, but, you know, you were very prophetic, Ken, that you got stuck with doing the editing on everything.
No, that's fine, because the editing I don't mind. I'm doing it now as we speak, so I already have two shows posted. The third one is edited and about to be converted here as we speak. So they doing that isn't a problem, especially when you put in the time at the very beginning and at the very end. It really, really makes it a lot easier to do the editing. So that's not an issue. What is very difficult is doing the show notes after the fact, because then you're listening to the show and you need to do in the show notes. But using the online tool, the Etherpad or whatever, then all the show notes are done and it's just copy and pasted into the posted episode and job done. Everything's done in the background. So
quite yeah, and I haven't kept up with that since I got home this evening and started drinking. I'm sorry.
Shock horror.
See, okay, you know, I'd been asleep in my very comfortable desk chair and I got in, you know, that was provided to me, and I was going to go to bed, and, you know, I said, you know, I really can't let TJ and Pokey, and I think it was Soundy, carry the podcast, and that raised me like the dead and set me back here in the chair, but didn't stop me drinking, so, you know, I hope somebody's kept up notes, because I probably haven't.
Yeah, it's been filled out as we go. I'll probably just start doing it now. Can you tell me who is the owner of the Mumble server, by the way? Somebody, last night somebody went and contacted them, and he upgraded from 20 to 40 slots.
See, I always stumble on that. I'm scrolling back as we speak, Ken.
Well, if you remember, I put a section called thanks at the bottom, and we can put that in there as well.
Yeah, I didn't get to that when we were talking earlier about the, you know, who to thank and whatever, and it's like, oh, you know, I started and stopped. And a couple hours ago, or no, maybe more, we were talking about what podcast we listened to. And I threw the Etherpad link in Oddcast Planet. So I'm not gonna type all these in. You guys, you know, throw all these in, because I'm not gonna do it.
I wrote a small script there during the week to convert podcast RSS URLs into an OPML file. If you want, I can talk about that.
Please do.
Just let me pull it up here. I'm surprised Dr. Seuss of Porn hasn't come in with a rimshot joke there. Ba-doom-tsh. This will be up on the HPR website. Our Gitorious page, by the way. So it's called Convert Mashpotter to OPML, and it's really a bit of a hack. So the first thing it does is just checks for two arguments. There's probably a better way of doing that. There's the in file and the out file, so mashpotter.conf, and it goes to whatever, something that OPML. So nothing rocket science-y there. The other thing it does is it looks for a program called XML Starlet. Now, if you have to deal with XML and XPath and you're not using XML Starlet, pause this program right now and go download it, or do an apt-get install or yum install or whatever, pacman install of XML Starlet. It is a fantastic tool.
And while you're talking about that, I'm going to out some people. Jay Rula, just after 35 minutes past midnight my time, and it's probably why I was taking a little break, but he said something about, oh, you haven't seen Drunkenness yet. Wait till 5150 comes back.
So XML Starlet is a toolkit. It's that allows you to do command line utilities for XML. And from the man page, XML Starlet is a set of command line tools that can be used to transform, query, validate, and edit XML documents and files using a simple set of shell commands in a similar way that is done for a plain text file using Unix grep, sed, awk, diff, patch, join, etc. commands. This set of command line utilities can be used by those who deal with many XML documents on the Unix shell command prompt, as well as for automating XML processing within shell scripts. The main command is options are --version and --help, which will display version and help, but then you go down into the various different commands after that.
Okay, Ken, it's been a busy day and I couldn't scroll back far enough, but it just appeared in my mind. John Neustetter is the host of the HBR Mumble server that you want to credit.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Can I put that into the notes? How would you spell his second name?
I guess just like it sounds. N-E-U Stetter.
S-T-E-D-D-E-R? Anyway, it's in the notes. Somebody can correct it. That would be great. Okay, back to XML Starlet, which we all love, of course. So, the XML Starlet, and it's all on some locations, it's just abbreviated to XML. So, on Windows, it might be XML or XML Starlet. It's available for Mac, Windows, and Linux as well. And the source code is available also. You have various different rough commands that you can do on a file. So you have XML Starlet space ed space select space XML Starlet ed and then a whole go of stuff. XML Starlet select and a whole go of stuff. And those commands are ed for edit, sel, sel for select, tr for transform, val for validate, fo for format, el to display element structure of a document, C14N XML conicalization, that word shouldn't exist. LS to list a directory as an XML file, amazingly useful sometimes. Escape special XML characters. Unescape special XML characters. PYX, convert XML to PYX format, which is obviously ISO 8879, and I'm not reading that from the man page at all. And the P2X, convert PYX into XML. To be honest, a lot of these are new functions that have just been added in the last few releases, so pretty cool. There's a XML *-devel at list.sourceforge.net, and the bug tracker is also linked in the thing there. What I tend to use it for is doing selections. So you can take an XML file and then basically convert it into a delimited text file, and then you can use setup and grep on it after that. You can also use it for validating. So for example, main core of what I'm doing is getting back to this, convert mashpotter to OPML, and I know all the bash programmers out there are going to have heart attacks when they see how ugly this code is, but again, this is all a clever and cunning plan on my part to write terrible code so that you can all come in and do other episodes on how to improve Ken's script. So the first thing is the basic tenant of the thing is to cat the file that you've got all your URLs in. So you've got a list of URLs that come from somewhere, either from Bashpotter or a list on a website or something or other. And you want to convert those into an OPML file. So for each of those files that come in, it will wget them from the website and then parse them into the right format to fit into an OPML document. So I probably should talk to you about what an OPML file is first, I guess. So give me one moment while I drag up some information on that. So thanks to our thanks to Wikipedia for the following information. OPML is the Outline Processor Markup Language, and it's an XML format that outlines defined as a tree where each node contains a set of names, attributes, and string values. Originally developed by Userland as a native file format for Outlander application for its Radio Userland product, since then has been adopted by many different people. So that doesn't tell you a whole lot. Let's see, about XML. Just give me one sec. XML is a file format, and the intention of XML, for people who don't know, is to make a file format that is both human readable and machine readable at the same time. Whether it is, it's defined by the W3C's XML 1.0 specification, although a lot of people use the 1.1 specification, which isn't that amazingly different. Its internet media type is application/XML or sometimes text/XML. And its basic thing is that you can have if there's something that you want to display, you can have it within nested tags. So for example, I could have all documents have to start with less than ? XML, and then some other attributes that can be in there, and then continue on from that. But let's go back to OPML as an example. So the first part of the document is that exact string. What I do is I echo into the out file the header parts of the that's required by the OPML specification. And similar to a web page, you've got a head section that has got title and date created. And the date created, I just go out to a shell and get the date in UTC RFC 2822 format, which is the email format that's used for RSS as well. And the date space dash U puts it in UTC format, and space dash dash RFC dash 2822 will specify that the dates are in that format. I'll just give you an example of what exactly that looks like. So here I've got a test file which has got two URLs in it. One is DistroCast, which has got the podcast and distrocast.org ? equals podcast ampersand format equals og. Just as we're speaking about this, a gentle reminder that the DistroCast podcast is looking for volunteers to assist in converting continuing their show. The DistroCast is a weekly newsletter that's sent out by Leslat Bodner of the DistroCast DistroWatch website. The Distro Watch is known by many people as a place where you can get information on distros, and has been running for as long as I can remember. The DistroCast podcast takes that feed and makes it accessible by using it as a script for a weekly podcast. They're looking for volunteers, and if you're able to volunteer to do that, even as part of a larger team, then feel free to contact us here, and we will pass on the information to you about that. So the other podcast is Rudjik podcast. Go ahead. Okay, the other one is podcast.rujic.net/question/feed=RSS2fast3, which is the Mashpodder format. And I picked those two because they presented both of those had issues with formatting. One was that there was an ampersand, and the other was that there was a double quote. So when I convert those in, the header part becomes the XML line with the encoding, the OpenML version 2, it's got a head, and nested under the head is a title, Bashpod or OPML export forward slash end title tag. Opening date created with the date, and then closing the header, and then basically the body. And the body continues on with lots of lines, and each of the lines is one line for the podcast itself. There are several different... Sorry, the distrocast.org podcast is not in any way related to the Distro Watch podcast. The Distrocast podcast is one where they take episodes and they run through them and compare them. It hasn't been released in a while. But that doesn't take away from the fact that the Distro Watch podcast is looking for supporters. So, sorry about that. Anyway, making this a lot more complicated than it actually needs to be. So, once we get down to the body part of this, which has been outputted into a file, and then at the end I have a closing body tag, closing OPML tag, and I pipe that into the output file as well. So for each line that's in the incoming file, I create one of those outline files. And to do that, I first of all use wget quiet mode with a timeout of 5 tries equals 1. If you don't put a timeout in there, wget will attempt to go to the website and recontinue downloading, but in my case, if the website's not up, then we just move on to the next one. What you see a lot is that websites, podcasts tend to go away after a while, and then their website becomes unavailable, and so you just skip over those. So wget dash dash quiet space dash dash timeout equals 5 timeout after 5 seconds, space dash dash tries equal 1, one try once, and then the URL. And then after the URL, I do have the URL in quotes just in case there are any characters like ampersands that will be interpreted by the bash command line. Then I have a space dash capital O to say don't save it as a file, output it somewhere, and I use space dash to say output it to standard. I'll put it to the console.
Ken, I want to break in. You tasked me with finding the correct spelling of the gentleman provides us with the Mumble server. It's John Neustetter, and I finally found it with my addled brain, and it's over in Hashogcast Planet for you.
Fantastic, thanks.
And I'm going to take this time to say I'm going to bed. I will see you all next New Year's.
I hope it isn't that long. Shoot, I've got 20 minutes from, not counting the part I sat in my very comfortable desk chair and was out. From doing the whole 24 hours. And at this point, I will, probably... do the 26th, and then anything after that, Marcus, if you can hear me, that's up to you.
Absolutely. Shall I continue on with this, or is it boring you to driving you all to sleep?
No, please do. It's probably the most interesting thing. It's just I've been concentrating on my other tasks, so I haven't actually been listening, but please go on.
That's not a problem. So, because a lot of these URLs will give errors, I redirect standard output into dev null, so taking 2 and redirect /dev/null. So that is going to give me a list of XML files that are going to be dumped out one after the other. So for each one of the XML files that comes through, there might be 404 files, there might be something else files, I don't really know, but I'm going to pipe them into XML Starlet. And I'm going to use the select command. And if you do XML starlet space SEL and then space dash dash help, you'll get more information about that, which is what I'll do right now.
Oh, Ken, while you got a break, it looks like we have dropped Dr. Susan Porn. Not that he was a problem, he wouldn't anything, but if you're looking for an opportunity to bring your kids on and say hello, this is probably the time to do it.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll bring them whenever they're ready. We've plenty of time. Yes, we've still got another how many hours? Oh, we missed Marrakesh Island.
Oh, not quite and a half in the NOR podcast. And like I said, well, it's become a cliche. I fully expect Marcus to jump in and do another, like, 12 hours after we give up.
That is the tradition, and we will put it out as long as they keep talking. So I'll keep doing this, and then I'll bring the kids in. How about that? Because they have actually...
No, that's fine. Whatever. I'm just saying, apparently we've run off all the wild folks for the current time.
Yeah, you carry it now. It's back on my shoulders to carry it for the rest of the while. It's not a problem. So, back to XML Starlet. The select command allows you to essentially replicate XSLT or XPath expressions, and you get various different options like -c copy of, -v to print, -o to output literal strings, -n to print new line. So it does give you an awful lot of the functionality that you would expect if you're using XSLT. But to be honest, I find it a lot easier to use it than working with an XSLT structure. So that's pretty cool. I tend to use the following commands quite a lot and not deviate really too much from those. So XML Starlet space SEL for select space -- capital T. And what that does is say I want to output text. You can also use XML Starlet to convert from one XML format into another, which I technically could do. I could use XML Starlet to do this, but I think it would be a lot more complicated. So really what I'm doing now is producing a line of delimited characters. So then after the capital T, there's a space lowercase t. And that says call a template. So I'm making a new XSLT template, which is kind of required. I don't want this to be a discussion on XSLT because, to be honest, my brain starts getting a little bit wobbly when I do that. But I need to have a template in order to look for something and then produce something. So that's just the way XSLT works. And the -- m is match. So I'm going to match the / RSS / channel. And what I'm looking for here is the RSS specification, so that anything coming in, I'm expecting it to be an RSS URL, and they have a nested XML file. So whereas the OPML starts with OPML, then you have a body, and then you have an outline. With RSS, the header section is actually is a channel, and that tells you about what the channel is. So for HPR, if you ever download the HPR RSS feed, then you'll see all the information about HPR in there, which I can do as well. Just give me one second. All the HPR feeds are available on the website. If you just click the OR button of radio, you'll get all the feeds. We have several different feeds available. The one that most people use is the HPR underscore OG underscore RSS.php, which is our OG feed. So I've opened that up now, and we have another XML format file. And the first line is RSS version blah, tells the parser what this is. Should also have UTF-8 in there, but that's a by the by. Then we have a channel section, which describes what the particular channel is about, and it also encompasses this whole thing. So this is a channel, and that channel is Hacker Public Radio. Within the channel section, you have title, links, various different things, and then you get into an item, and then the item are the actual shows, and then there you also have title, author, and links. So in that, excluding the item sections in the channel sections, you have all the things are related to this channel, which is Hacker Public Radio, the Hacker Public Radio channel. So you've got a title in there, you've got a link linking back to the show, you've got some iTunes stuff, you've got a description. So what I'm looking for is the title and the description from here, which I can then push into an OPML file. So when I get that back, I look for RSS and channel. So with XML Starlet, I'm parsing the RSS feed, and I position myself that I'm under RSS and I'm in channel, so I can refer to everything just as title, meaning I know where I am. Think of it a bit like changing directory. I've changed directory from the root into RSS, then into the channel, and now when I'm talking about title, I'm talking about title because I happen to be in the channel and not the title that I would need to be if I changed directory into an item and then looked at a title. So the title refers to the title of the channel from there on in. It's a lot easier if you follow along. So then what I'm doing is I'm producing a whole list of text, and I use probably a very ugly hack, and I'm sure there's better ways of doing that, and I'd love to hear episodes about it, obviously. I use placeholder, hash placeholder underscore less than hash, then the word outline, space text equals. And basically what I'm doing here is I'm filling up having XML Starlet produce strings, and within those strings concatenate in two different items. One is the title of the channel from the RSS feed, and the other is the description of the channel from the RSS feed. So in the case of Hacker Public Radio, the title would be Hacker Public Radio, and
ahoy me hearties.
I'll just continue on because I need to go in a moment or two. And then we have description, which is Hacker Public Radio is a podcast that releases shows every weekday, Monday to Friday. Our shows are produced by the community, you, and can be any topic that are of interest to actors, etc., etc. So then that produces that string, essentially, and it pipes it with a dash n, meaning put a new line after each of the lines, and sends it out to standard output. I also redirect any errors into dev null, meaning they're just thrown away. And then I use a sed command, which I got from gist.github.org, agroboy, who had done that to escape XML characters. Because XML is made out of greater than signs, less than signs, quotes, double quotes, and ampersands, those all, and semicolons, those all need to be escaped out, meaning that you, if you want to actually carry an ampersand in XML, you need to convert that ampersand into a ampersand, into the literal string ampersand AMP semicolon. So that needs to be done for all of those. So the sed command will take all of those and replace them, and it also replaces the placeholders to greater thans and less thans, which is an ugly way of doing it. I will be the first to admit that. But what you end up with is the placeholder for greater than being converted to a greater than less than, and any greater thans and less thans that have been added, that have, or quotes or double quotes or ampersands that are in the text or the description of the RSS feeds that are being sent down, they're all correctly escaped and put into this OPML file. And then it basically does that, and at the end it just puts the last closing body tag and closing OPML tag. That's pretty much it. That's all I have to say about that.
I'm sure it's all very fascinating, and I have to admit that you sent me out to find the right spelling of John Neustadter, and I was concentrating on that rather than listening to you, and then I was running down to the laundry downstairs to find pants. You don't need it, but I'm sure, you know, I definitely want to, you know, to listen to this when it comes out on the podcast. You know, I'm not dismissing you, but, you know, me and drinking this evening and all that, I can honestly come to you and say, well, I've been listening with both ears to the whole thing.
Not at all, and I didn't expect you to. So what I've done is I've just pasted all three things into the Etherpad, which will put them into the show notes for this, so you get an exact idea of what exactly I'm trying to do. So the first thing is we're trying to convert one thing, and then into the output format, which you'll see there, and then I put in the bash file, basically explaining how it's done. And the very last thing I use is XML Starlet validation to validate the output file, and that's pretty much that.
Hey, Ken Valen. Nice. This, hey. Actually, I believe this is the first time we've ever been in a podcast together.
That would actually be true. Handsome pirate. Arr, avast, matey. How's life?
Right now, a bit sleepy, but it's 10 till 5 a.m. here. Actually, just got back up from downstairs, just working on model train.
Model trains, say you. Tell us more.
Yeah, I modeled the original Norfolk Southern in N-scale. Specifically, I modeled Edenton, North Carolina in 1948. The original Norfolk Southern ran from Norfolk, Virginia to Raleigh and then on to Charlotte, North Carolina. And by modeling 1948, I get to have a mixture of steam and diesel powered, as well as passenger trains. And I model late summer, so it's peanut and potato season in Edenton, so that adds lots of interesting traffic. And you know, I do a lot of scratch building, and it's a lot of fun.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Do tell us more about this, because I need to just nip out and do some folder time. So I'm not being rude, I'll be back in a few minutes, yeah?
Well, I was actually honestly thinking about calling it a night.
Don't do that, man. You're going to stick me with... I started here 24 hours ago trying to come up with something to say.
Fortunately, I'm actually up at my dad's place until I move out west, and he has me doing farm work, so I'm going to be spending tomorrow putting up a bunch of fence, and I need to sleep.
I'll be back in 5 minutes with the kids, yeah, and we'll carry it from then. How's that?
Yeah, that'll be good. You know, I don't know if you heard, Ken. We just discovered this evening that me and TJ are mortal enemies.
Yeah, I heard that, all right.
Wait, 51, I missed this part.
I'm a McGregor, and DJ is related to Campbells.
I'm Clan McDuffie, so I'm with... Well, it's interchangeable, McDuffie and McPhee, you know, depending on who's sitting up and who's the clan chieftain. Actually, right now, there's no one as clan chieftain.
Yeah, although I've ever used this, that kid that wanted to wear a kilt to his formal, you know, so I signed in as Clan McGregor, saying, "Yeah, you should let the kid wear a kilt."
Yeah, you know, I never went to any high school dances, but. If I had, I'd have probably worn the kilt, and I'd have probably gone commando.
No, you see, it with the kilt, it's called regimental.
Yeah, I've actually never heard it called regimental. I've always just heard it called commando. But at any rate, you know, one of my other hobbies is I do SCA, and I do late 13th century Scott. You know, someone that would have been running around with Braveheart in that crowd. And they did not wear kilts, contrary to Braveheart.
No, I mean, the kilt, as we know it, is because the English insisted the Scots had to wear at least the top half of a uniform. Before that, the tartan was worn more like a toga.
Well, yeah, it was basically they wore their blanket.
Yeah, exactly. They wore the horse blanket.
And, you know, going back to the era of Braveheart, that was... not so common, especially, it definitely wasn't seen amongst the nobles. The nobles wore something called a lean, which basically looked like a really long dress.
Well, see, you know, I have my problems with Braveheart because they have the, I don't think I've seen it since the first time I watched it. There's a scene, like, here comes the Gregors, and here's these greasy, half-dressed people coming out of the trees, you know. It's like an in-joke, because, of course, Braveheart, you know, his uncle's Argyll, and Argyll's a title, the family name was Campbell. Again, these are my, mortal enemies, so, you know, so the Lord of Argyll is a Campbell, and so in Braveheart, they, you know, they belittled the McGregors.
Well, it's, the movie is definitely full of inaccuracies. The first battle that they show, they call it Battle of Stirling, it was the Battle of Stirling Bridge, and it took place on a bridge. And there's no bridge in that battle in the movie.
Well, yeah, and, it was from a contemporary poem, I mean, and they imply that, Mel Gibson's character was actually the father of the British line after that, and it's like the gay prince's wife from France, she didn't even show up in England until 4 years after William Wallace was dead.
Indeed, I mean, at the time of the events of the movie, she was like 9 years old, and so therefore not likely to be skiddly pumping around. Of course, they did do things pretty young back then.
Right, and I mean, all these guys went off to the, I'll say Inquisition, that's not right, but to the Crusades. It's always been implied, a lot of those guys, you know, a lot closer to the huntsmen or whatever than they were to their wives.
Well, yeah. I loved Braveheart movie when I was young, and now that I know what actually went down historically, I can't stand it.
Well, I still like it as a movie, but I don't expect it to be historical at all.
Well, I mean, they could have tried a little harder, you know, like had them wear the right things and things, you know, they could have worn the right stuff and they could have had the Battle of Stirling Bridge actually be on a bridge, and you know, just stuff like that that wouldn't have been hard to do, but they didn't even bother.
Well, you've got a point there, but it is a Mel Gibson movie.
I mean, to be honest, last time I saw it, I was half expecting a super-powered car and half the body panels missing and a bunch of skulls welded on here and there to come charging over the hill with some bald dude with a machine gun start just opening up on everybody.
Well, you know, to be fair, Rob Roy wasn't much better.
I was thinking more along the lines of Mad Max.
No, but, you know, I just think historical movies. I mean, Rob Roy, we were talking about feuds and stuff most of his life because of the prescription. He called himself a Campbell, and you know, they make him a hero in the movie, and Rob Roy pretty much, you know, he was head of the McGregor clan, but you know, he removed himself. He didn't really do anything himself. He sent cousins and such to do his fighting for him.
Also, random aside, by the way, and Scott Scalic, which it's debatable as to whether or not Wallace spoke it. He probably at least knew a little bit, but it it's debatable as to whether or not he spoke it as his native language. But anyway, in Scots Gaelic, you have no W sound. So in Gaelic, his name is William Orlis.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing. A couple things I'd like to do. I talked earlier this evening. On my bucket list, I would like to see New Zealand, and Klaatu confirmed there are places in New Zealand that look like all these rather picturesque places that we see in the Hobbit movies and the further adventures of Hercules and Xena, and probably before that on my bucket list would be go to Scotland and walk the sod of my forefathers. We are coming up on another hour, so let me see where we ought to be. I do see it's been 24. I've been up 24 hours, so it's GMT 10 o'clock again the next day. Let me scroll down. And when I say scroll down, I'm on my crappy old computer because my laptop, I did some messing around with DNS and I shouldn't have, and it's got, you know, maintenance connection, but it's flaky on DNS. I mentioned that earlier today. Okay, if I have the right of it, it is 10 Zulu 2015. Greetings to small regions of USA. Must be out there by Hawaii. And it says Honolulu, Rotonga, Adak, and Papeete. So looks like they're celebrating the new year out there in Hawaii. I wish I was there, rather in the snow and the 16-degree temperature, what we had today. So, you know, if anybody's out there in Hawaii listening, I don't think we've ever had anybody from Hawaii on the channel. Please jump into the mumble and join us and tell us what it's like not to freeze your butt this time of year.
Hi, 50. I've got my kids here. Should we do that now?
Oh, please do.
Just give me 1 second. I'm going to switch to... Okay. Who are you? Say hello. Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year. I'm Roisin.
Okay. Who are you?
Happy New Year. I'm Patrick.
Okay. Who are you?
Happy New Year. I'm Sinead.
Okay. And who are you?
Happy New Year. I'm Manon.
The voice of HBR.
Happy New Year belated to Ken Fallon and family.
Happy New Year, y'all.
Okay, so what have we got here? I came down one morning and found this. And this.
You know, you're beating on strange boxes does not translate very well in the audio, Ken.
Shall I tell you what's in those boxes?
Please do.
There's a box full of hard disk components, and it's completely taken apart. Who took these apart?
We did. It's not a completely... Some things are stuck together.
Okay, so what did I do? I give you a hard disk. Yes. And told you to take it apart.
Yes, only this is not.
So what's this part here? What was the first thing that you had to take apart?
Was this.
Okay, so we had the outside case. So you took the case apart. Or the first thing you took off was the what do we call this?
I don't know.
It's a what color is it?
Green.
It looks like purple.
Yeah, it's a printed circuit board. And what did I say that does? Can you remember? It talks Dutch on one side and it talks to the hard disk on the other side, yeah? So it converts the instructions from one side and to the other. And what's this on the bottom? What do you think that's for?
It's a bastard.
No.
You have to say it in English.
To stick it together.
Yeah. And also?
It's softer than it isn't squeaking.
That's right. It stops it from vibrating. Okay. So when you took off the printed circuit board, what was left? And were you able to find all the screws, or were they hidden?
Yes, we found most of the screws.
But it didn't all come out. So where? What did you have to take off then to get the rest of the screws?
The
stickers.
Yes, the stickers. Yeah. All the stickers, and then
we had screws, and then we
could
take that off.
Okay, so what's in the... Whoa! That is a what? Do you know what that does?
Nope.
It's a round thing in the middle. Now have a spin of it. Tell me what you think it does. Remember we watched the...
spins the hard disks.
Yes, exactly. Now your one, Sinead and Roisin have one that's quite old, and it's only got one platter, but Podrick has a newer one that was all 20 megabytes. And Podrick's one is glued in, so his motor doesn't come out of the case. So what else did you have? What was inside it?
A sort of a CD.
CDs.
It's a hard disk. You can remember the name?
A hard
disk platter.
Yeah, and
can you tell me something about it? They make a nice sound.
Yes.
Why? You're not supposed to touch them together. Ooh, they do make a nice sound. Put that up to the microphone. I thought they were made very good mirrors.
Yes.
They're very good mirrors. I remember we saw the video, the slow-mo guys, it's also another good YouTube video channel. They took a hard disk apart, and what did they do?
Put water
on it.
And maybe it wasn't lying.
It was smirking after that so much. But, did you see how fast it works? So, what else was there? So, you have these hard disks on the motor. You have the motor in the center. You've got these platters on top. Podrick had... How many did you have?
Four.
And they were like pizza boxes, one on top of the other, yeah?
Yes.
And Roisin and Sinead only had one. But it's a very pretty one, that's what he said. And what else was there?
This.
This would be a...
This is... It keeps the...
It's a actuator, it's called.
Yes. Yeah,
it's like an arm. And yours has just got one.
With this.
And this doesn't really work very well on radio. This is a cable that goes into a controller. Yeah. And all the instructions that come out of the back of the computer goes down those little pins and goes through a ribbon cable to the actuator. And why is the actuator... What's on the back of the actuator? You see that metal there? It's shaped a bit like a can opener, I guess. And Podrick's one's got four different fingers. Why is that?
Because it has four different platters.
Very good. Whereas Sinead's and Roisin's one only's got one. Aww.
Hey, Ken Fallon, quick suggestion.
Yep.
When we do the show notes for this, toss up a few pictures of all this stuff.
Absolutely, will do, yeah. So, what else have we got?
Magnets.
Yes,
and they're really stuck.
They're really stuck together, really strong.
Yeah.
What do you think the magnet? What did the guy say the magnets were for? There was another one called the engineer guy. Can you remember what he said about them?
No.
It's a very good video. The engineering guy. He said the magnets were to make the platter move
there's
left and right.
There's a little magnet in one of the big magnets.
Yep.
I'm going to
pull that one out.
Push it out, but first I need to unstuck them.
Yeah, you need to get a screwdriver and pull them apart. Be careful. What do we learn about the screwdriver?
Push it away.
Away from yourself and not to yourself. So you don't like push this. Like this doesn't work in Radio City. So you have to describe it. So say you put your hand down on the table, you have to make sure that you're pushing it away so that your hand is behind the screwdriver. And also your brother and sister is behind the
screwdriver.
In front of the screwdriver, yeah.
Behind it.
Yeah. Fantastic. And what other tools did you use? Did you have funny shaped screws?
Yeah.
And where did you get the screws for that? Where's the toolbox?
Got them.
From? Here. And this is a Draper SEC33FFP. And it's got multiple head tools. If you don't have one of these, you should definitely get it. It's got all, I don't know how many. How many's in there?
Somebody
count them.
And,
Four times eight. Is? 4 keer 8.
32.
There you go, and that girl has dyscalculia. Give her a big round of applause, everybody. The crowd goes wild.
I can't clap and hold push to talk at the same time. Sorry.
Okay, but he's doing a virtual clap. Now, Roisin has got a piece of... Ooh, what is it? It looks like a tampon. A man for bond. It's a filter paper, but it's really small. About the size of your fingernail. What did he say that was for, though, gentlemen? The dust. To clean the little bits of dust on the hard disk. Because this, when the hard disk spins, remember how fast it's going? It's going 60 miles an hour on the head. That's as fast as they're allowed to go on the motorway, the cars on the motorway. Going over the hard disk. And what else did you say about the hard disk? Do you remember about the football field?
Yes.
If you stretch half of the disk out, so the radius of the disk out, to make it the size of a football field, what?
It's so
flat?
Flat as my
hair. A single strand of hair. So if you stretch out the radius of a hard disk out to the size of a football field, it is so flat that from one end to the other end, it doesn't go up and down one length of your hair, which is very, very small. Pretty impressive, huh? But now, what are hard disks being replaced by? Other disks, so solid-state disks. And they're a bit boring. They don't have anything inside them. You can take some of them apart as well. So, what else? Was that fun?
Yeah.
Yes, but...
And now what are you going to do with the bits?
Knitzel?
So Knutzel is called Arts and Crafts. What are you thinking of making?
I don't know.
I'm going something. To make I don't know.
A really funny house.
Hey. I'm going to make a magnet so that it can
stick to.
Find other little magnets, and these are the best magnets ever. Yes, I
got them apart,
and I have one of the smallest magnets I ever seen before.
That small magnet is used to hold the hard disk the heads in place, so that when you turn off the hard disk, it doesn't go sliding across and damaging. And that's what this is for, the other side of this. Woo! It's a really small part. That's to make that stick to that.
Okay.
So that's, one is on the side of the, where the hard disk comes in, and the other one pulls in the hard disk and they stick together. So that when you turn off the computer, it'll be in a safe place. So you wanted to say something on the channel?
Oh, I was going to say, if they wind up making something with all those bits, post something post that too.
Yeah, we'll do.
Also,
yeah,
I was curious as to how old they were.
How old are you?
9.
How old are you?
Nearly 11.
Nearly 11, yes. Another 3 months.
No.
7.
So, you're 7. You're going to be 8 in? April. And you're going to be 11 in?
March.
March, yes. Almost 11. On a Friday. Cool.
So good ages to be taking on engineering projects.
Absolutely. What else did you do this year in the front room?
Nothing.
We made the
bean shape.
Yeah, you put together the
book cover.
We got a whole go of
the cover.
Was that hard?
No, not really.
It was a bit like doing Lego, wasn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
Easy peasy.
Lemon squeezy. Squeezy
with a cherry on the top.
Yes. We got some flat pack furniture from IKEA, and I put one of them together, and they put the rest together. It's child labor. Okay, you tell us
what you know, what's gonna get you, Ken, is, you know, when you actually have to put them to work, and you've got the IKEA instructions and all of that to help you do that. You know, pretty pre-made labor force.
Exactly, and Lego trains them exactly how they know from putting Lego together. Know exactly what to do, follow instructions. What were you saying? By the way, what did I say? First of all, what did I say about holding tools? When you're finished with them, you put them down. Yeah. Okay. Now you know what the magnet's for.
No. Where it sits.
Oh, it sits into that.
Into a small
enclosure.
Well, yes, enclosure, and I don't know where this is.
That magnet goes.
But I first found it in the small
box. Oh, okay.
Yes.
So cool.
Clearly, Ken Fallon, you're not a farmer, because when you put down tools, the rule is you put them down where you cannot find them again for 25 years, and you find the old rusted tool 40 years later, and you wish, you know, you make the wish again. That if you could farm by planting old tools, you would be a millionaire.
Yes, I was a farmer. I know exactly what you mean.
Oh, so you know about things like running around putting in fence posts and all kinds of stuff like that.
Yes, I do. My hands are scarce to prove it.
Just why I need to be going to bed, because that's what I'm going to be doing here in a few hours.
All right, say goodbye to Handsome Pirate.
Bye.
He's a pirate, an actual pirate.
I know you didn't say he was actually handsome.
I'm 5150 as a cowboy. An actor.
There I am.
Nice.
Hi, good job now.
Slacking, just slack. Okay, what else? Did you want to share some Dutch naughty words with people?
No.
Never. No? Are there some useful Dutch words that people can learn?
Like if you folks would like to do some actual Dutch singing, I think we would enjoy that.
The boer sit in the bus. I have a very funny daughter. The boer sit in the bus, it literally translates to the farmer sits in the bus. And they think it's funny because it was the first sentence in Dutch I ever learned, because it was the first sentence in a Dutch book that I had. And to this day, after 15 years, I have never managed to put a sentence together where I used the boer sit in the bus.
Well, I tell you what, when you say the farmer sits in the bus, that puts me in mind of a duck blind where they fall. You know, taking an old bus body and throwing it in next to a river body of water, and the only purpose of it is for hunters to inhabit this old bus body and jump when they're, you know, when they see it, they have a population of ducks. And I could have done that. Now, see, the laws in Kansas are that if I'm hunting on my own property or my father's property, of course, I do not need a hunting license. However, if I'm hunting up a game, then I have to load my shotgun with steel shot, which I really hate to do. I would have to buy a hunting license and then purchase a hunting stamp. And I was out there today, and man, there were 1,000 ducks sitting out there on my property. And it's like, I can't touch them.
Well, from their point of view, it's you sitting on their property. Okay, guys, do you want to say goodbye?
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye, kids.
Hold on, I'm getting in the headset. 1 second.
The whole singing thing, because it just isn't right unless you have the singing thing.
Okie dokie, we're back.
Good morning, or Happy New Year as well.
Good morning. Chalkalum? Is that correct?
Spoke like a native. Spoke like a native.
And, you know, Ken's got his kids up, and it's like, oh, we got to talk to the creepy junk guy, or the creepy guy who's in America who's slurring his words because he's wasted.
No, you're a cowboy. This is, I think, the coolest thing on the planet. We get to talk to a cowboy and a pirate.
Well, that reminds me of I used to have the big old black hat, and I went served as a customer who was a school, and I went to the district office, and the minister, he had his kids there, and I walked in, and the kids were, "You look like a cowboy." I said, "It's the hat."
He looks like a wolf cowboy, he sounds like a cowboy, he's a cowboy. So many more hours are left in this thing, that is the question.
Well, we just lapped the original mark, so, you know, another 2 hours, less 20 minutes, by my reckoning, and then, of course, where's Marcus? Marcus can take over for another 30 hours.
Yeah, that's fine by me. It stops at 12, so that's that, basically. So in an hour and a half, it's over. Cool. Well done. Let's have a look and see how many people were on the streams, actually.
At this point, I would wager not a whole lot.
There are 21 listeners on the one stream, with a peak listeners of 31 people. And there are, on the second stream, there are 0 listeners, with a peak listeners of 14. So, total of 45 max people at any one time.
But 21 right now, I'm just flabbergasted.
We're rocking the world.
Well, I suppose the Europeans are creeping out of their caves at the moment, and the Americans are heading off to bed.
That would be it, yeah.
I tell you what, man. I'm figuring on staying another, it's not 2 hours, hour and a half, but not without a little help, you know. So you folks lurking on the stream, jump on the mumble, and, you know, keep me awake.
1 hour and 33 minutes.
It would be interesting, Ken, to hear about the kind of technology that went into the streams, or maybe it's not very complicated, I just don't know how that works.
Yeah, sure, I can run through that for you. There, one of the we're using Mumble, and we need to thank again.
Tell you what, Ken, save it for a podcast.
No, this is a podcast. I mean, we do need to fill an hour and a half with stuff, so I have no problem doing that.
John Newsteader runs the Mumble server, which you're all on at the moment. So it's, as I get the window open, 1 second. It's OpenSpeak. And ch1.teamspeak.cc, port 64747. And in there, we all essentially just chat using Mumble. Mumble is a great little tool for essentially IRC for audio, I guess, would be the best description of what it is. And in there we have two streaming bots. So they're Mumble clients. One is a HPR streamer bot, and the other is the ZREC bot from Kevin Wisher. And I don't know how Kevin is doing his streaming, but I'll run through how I set up my one if you want.
Yeah, this streaming bot, I don't understand. That's why you'll tell us. Is it client or what is it?
Yeah, sure. I'll tell you just 1 second.
And while Ken is getting associated, I have to say that we have found a couple recent clients or members, rather, that who do not find Mumble very accessible. And, you know, we'd like to help them through that. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It has turned out to be inaccessible for our visually impaired listeners. I really don't understand why there isn't a command line client for Mumble. There's no reason why we couldn't have a command line client for it, or at least something that would use what do you call that?
Well, Jonathan told me today that if you hit Alt S for the settings, then the settings are very accessible, which is strange for a Qt project. But there's that whole thing I forgot to dismiss when I was trying to help out Mike and Trent the first time you get into Mumble if you don't select. Well, if you do or don't select a server, that's the first thing. And the next thing is it tries to go into a bunch of dialogues and set your levels for transmitting. So I didn't throw in how to get out of that and go around. So probably for a lot of people that might well be necessary. But I did come up with a basically text Mumble tutorial because, as we discussed, Ken, you know, the PDF Mumble tutorial is, you know, it's great for visual people, you know, and, you know, it's got a bunch of screenshots, but if you wanted to listen to it as text, you've got about 20 words in the whole thing.
Yeah, I understand, but, you know, people volunteer this stuff and we'll get it translated. Unfortunately, we don't have the time to do this, so we will. It's on the to-do list, and we'll get a text version of that done to have available on the website anyway. So that's something that we're definitely having on the to-do list. And we're also going to see how we can get Mumble so it becomes accessible, or how we can work around it so it can become accessible. Unfortunately, that issue only became apparent during the show, so we're already locked and going before we could do anything about it. But I have been looking around for alternatives. Unfortunately, I was trying to think of the word incurses. I see no reason why you couldn't have an incurses version of Mumble. But the Mumble developers are games developers, and they assume that you are have vision and have audio, and that you have complete control of dexterity and everything, otherwise you wouldn't be playing the games. The side effect that we find Mumble so useful as a tool for hosting and talking to communities is a side effect. So their goal is to focus on the gaming side. That said, there is a Ruby program out there, which is a command line tool for accessing Mumble. Now, I've had a little bit of luck with that, but not a lot. But what I really would like, and I said last year and the year before, is a command line version, and failing that, a incursus version of Mumble to you know, to be able to just join a stream and to talk. It shouldn't really be that difficult to at least do the basic stuff. But again, maybe I'm underestimating it.
Well, Trenton, he gave me a site that he was using, but I do think it's limited. Like we were earlier today to 20 connections. I'm not sure, it wasn't apparent to me why this was so much more accessible, but probably you'd compare it to Google Meetups, and I haven't done a meetup, so I don't know why. You know, I'm sure there's probably accessibility issues from Google that this solves. But you know, I did write back to him. I don't think 20 connections would be enough for the 24-hour show. And while I'm in the position to say how great people are, you know, I was thinking last year, you know, John Neustetter, he bumped up the connections for the 24-hour show to 100, and it was great. And, to his server, because it's a virtual server that the APR client is, mobile client is running on. And, you know, I was saying, well, this morning somebody said there were 10, and I said, well, it's probably too late to get a hold of John, because he's got to go in and talk to his provider and say, I need more connection. And thankfully, Kevin Wisher didn't believe that, because apparently he actually talked to John a couple months ago about this, and John probably, you know, you got stuff going on, you know, and we got the whole server and everything, and it's great we got that, but this is one little detail John might have forgotten. And Wisher went on, and about noontime today, he said, oh, yeah, we got it fixed. We're up to 40 connections. So not to bogart the podcast, but for the help, you know, for other things, definitely I would like to acknowledge Kevin Wisher, and for providing us with this forum to talk on, the whole and entire mobile server, I want to credit John Neustetter at this time.
And while we're thanking people, we need to thank anhonesthost.com, Josh Culp, who is the admin over there, and he supports eBay. Without anhonesthost.com, we wouldn't be able to have the HPR site or any of the HPR resources. So now my little tutorial is basically about a VPS that is running on one of the honesthost.com servers, and in there I'm running a VNC, you know, a headless X session. So is everyone familiar with that, or do I need to explain a little bit more about that?
It's okay.
Yeah, I think we're cool. I mean, in earlier this morning when he sent me all the stats, I think probably if anything had gone wrong, I would have been totally lost. But really, we've got an hour and 20 minutes to get through our 26-hour show, so I'm not really worried about it.
Okay, well, I'll continue on with the request as given, and explain basically what's happening on the VPS. So this could be it doesn't necessarily need to be a cool fancy VPS like we happen to have. It could be a laptop or something on the back end of a reliable internet connection. But the beauty of this is We're running everything on the one machine, so you can treat everything as a similar machine. So all I did really was...
Well, can't this point, can you tell us which VNC you're actually running?
Running VNC Viewer as the client, and Tiger VNC as the server. So when I installed... So we have this HBR VPS, which is running Fedora, essentially, and we normally use that to do the transcoding, so we don't process anything on the HBR server itself, which is a large server and it's got a lot of additional scripts on there. So we have our own machine that's firewalled off, and we pull stuff down from the HBR server onto that machine, process them, and then send them back again using our own keys. So the keys are not stored on the VPS either, which is kind of cool. So on that machine, it was normally just processing audio. So when I set this up, it kind of ground to a halt and contacted Josh. And within like a few hours, he was back to me, and the machine had been upgraded. The virtual machine had been upgraded. 4 gigs of RAM, 4 processors, everything hunky dory. And all of a sudden, like, we have less than 5-6 seconds lag between. Me talking here and it coming out on the live stream, so it's absolutely awesome.
So this was before recording the live show that you were making these changes, and
I've been busy with this for about a month. So
excellent.
We had a lot of, you've seen headless, there was an email thread going around about a headless server, and Corba2 and Klaatu helped me out with that. Because I already had some X stuff running in there and some settings, and there was a few gotchas about trying to get a headless server running. It actually just wouldn't work for me for ages and ages and ages, and then I just followed the steps, which was essentially the exact same thing again, and it worked cleanly out of the box. The main issue that I had was tunneling the VNC connection. So what I did then was, to set the thing up in the first place, I just installed it, had VNC running, and used the firewall to block it on all ports except my own. And that way I was able to troubleshoot the connection, and I was able to get through without a problem. And then once I had that working, then I knew I could then try tunneling it via SSH, and that worked also quite well. So if people are familiar with remote desktop in a Windows environment, this is essentially the same thing that VNC does. VNC is also available for Windows, so it allows you to simply go VNC and the IP address, and then not a port, but a session connection, and then you get into that. So with systemd, I had quite a lot of issues because, again, not because there were systemd issues, but because things had changed, and all the documentation I found on the web referred to other ways of doing it and not the systemd way of doing it. But as I said during the community news, systemd now is giving us a standardized way, so that a how-to on Fedora will be the same as a how-to on Debian in a few years. They will all be based in systemd, and we will then get the benefits of doing that. So I have a various different components. Are an Icecast server is the thing doing the stream, so it's yum install Icecast. I don't know if I need to go into anything about that. I can if people want me to. Let me just get up the configs. We have an hour and a half to kill anyway, so
I missed something, Ken. You know, obviously there's a Mumble server, and I played myself installing it locally, and that's not hard. So there's a Mumble server somewhere. Then you have your own VPS.
So I'll work back from the streams to the Mumble server, if that's okay. It actually makes more sense if you do it that way.
All right.
Yeah, is that okay?
Sure.
So we have an Icecast server running, and the Icecast config is actually quite small. It runs in the background. I've got a log path. The log file is isis.log, and then within that, it's basically an XML file, stream, Hacker Public Radio, genre, and then basically it pays. It's got a port and then a password for administration, but basically that's it. Well, actually, it doesn't make any sense to do it that way. I'll do it the other way. sorry about that.
Well, Ken, it does seem that, you know, I do everything thanks to you. You know, any of your old volumes through SHFS. And you know, it's an incredible tool.
So, okay, you've got Mumble running. We'll do it that way. Got Mumble running. Or you've got Mumble client installed, so nothing different about that. So what I use is Pulse Audio Control. So PACTRL. And then there's a module in there that you can make a sync, a null sync. Are you with me so far, or am I losing people?
Well, if you have Pulse Audio, it's not nearly as easy if you're stuck on.
Okay, but about 50. I'm giving a explanation of what's on the VPS, so I have what I have. So Pulse Audio is installed, and then I set up a sync that will. It's just a place where audio goes to, and I actually have two of those. One for the input and one for the output.
Oh, I see. You've got a slot set up where people can jump in and hand you stuff.
Yeah, and the command to do that is PACTL, Pulse Audio Control, space load-module, and then the module name, which is space module-null-sync, space, and then the sync underscore name equals HBR string. So that creates a dummy place, like a dummy audio card, where audio can go into the ether, basically. So within Mumble, I set, I installed the program PA Volume Control, which should be installed in every distro, but isn't. And that allows you to control what goes into where. Using Pulse Audio.
Oh, I agree. If you have Pulse Audio,
and I do.
And most distributions do now. I'm on Debian, but I do have it. But you know, if you've got Pulse Audio, this solves so many problems. Because I do this, and I start an application, and it's pulling or listening or broadcasting from the wrong device. So, Pulse Audio fixes all that.
Okay. So then the next thing is, so in Mumble is configured to use Pulse Audio. And then within Pulse Audio, I configure it so that the Mumble stream goes to this, sync. Yeah. And then I use a tool called Dark Ice, which you can install quite easily. And the only thing you need to change in there is in the input settings, and you go Pulse Audio Source Name equals HPR Stream dot Monitor. So what that does is anything that goes into that HPR Stream, which is a null sync from Pulse Audio, is picked up by Dark Ice. And then so that's the input from Dark Ice, and the output from Dark Ice goes into the Icecast 2 section, which is the mount point is stream.org with the name of HPR live event and the URL and the podcast and whatever, with the server IP address and port number. And you with me so far?
Yeah, this is the bit I didn't follow, so this is all good stuff.
Okay, so the configuration of that, I'll take the passwords out and put it into the show notes. So Dark Ice now is hearing the output from Mumble via the this null device that you created. And the null device has to be called HPR Stream. That was the stream underscore name, and that's the key. And then it pulls that in, and then it pushes it out to Icecast. To stream.org, and then Icecast config, it's a fairly simple config as well. It's just got a stream.org thing, and then it plays it, and it's got a password on, and those passwords need to match. It's And then after that, it's just people connect to the stream, and that's it, job done.
Excellent.
So the only other thing that was a bit tricky in the Dark Ice config was the sample bitrate. I used OGG everywhere end to end. So you need to make sure that your Dark Ice config and your ISIS config, your Dark Ice and your IceCast config match up. So the sample rate I picked that worked was 44/100, 16 bits per second, two channel stereo. For some reason, I wanted it as mono, but for some reason it would only work with stereo, so fine, stereo it is. And those then matched what I had in my IceCast config as well. Well, the IceCast wasn't actually that concerned. It just wanted to know. The IceCast config is fairly simple. The number of clients, the queue size, the connection timeout, the authentication for the source password, which is obviously the same one that Dark Ice uses, and then the port and the stream name, which I've set up as a relay for some reason, but it works, so I didn't bother too much about that. So then I got a little bit adventurous, and I decided, well, if I've got this VPS running, what I could do is have a screen session, or I could also pipe in, create another sync, and then use that to play music on the HPR in the screen session on the VPS. And then I wonder, would that be picked up? And of course, if you connect to the and of course, if you do that, then you will hear this. Actually, you won't, because it failed to initialize audio. Well, live events. But what it means is then you can have an input audio device as well into Pulse Audio, and that's picked up by Mumble, or it's picked up by the entire thing, and it's piped into the Mumble channel, which is then picked up by the output device and sent down to Dark Ice, and from Dark Ice into IceCast.
Yeah, sorry about that. Kind of dropped out there a little and floating around in my head, so I hope I can make another hour and 10 minutes till the end of the normal podcast, and after that is the baby of Marcus, whoever shows up to the end cast.
Cool. Yeah?
I've heard you talk to your kids. You haven't brought them on yet. Maybe you want to do that before we get too crazy.
Sorry, what are you saying? You want me to bring on the kids?
Well, did you do that already? I think you did that momentarily.
They were on for quite a while, 50. You really need to go to sleep, dude.
I really probably should. But, I would feel better about that if some other folks might jump in and carry the podcast for another hour.
That would be nice, yeah.
It was interesting, your comment, Ken, about Mumble being primarily for gaming. And I had read that in the past. And the thought that struck me is, would we see something Mumble-like coming from WebRTC? I've played around with some of the Jitsi or JIT.SI and various other applications, and shows potential, but nowhere near as sophisticated as, of course, as what Mumble does.
Well, see, that's the problem, Chuckalorn, if I'm pronouncing your name right, and I'm sorry if I'm not. Mumble, like TeamSpeak, as I understand it, was originally developed as a proprietary project for people who were in games to talk to each other. And if it's proprietary, I can't understand why there's such a huge QT code base in Mumble. But unfortunately, that QT code base keeps a lot of people from jumping in and participating.
Yeah, that was a major pity. I would like to get that resolved going forward, to be honest with you.
Well, like I said, Trenton, you know, he suggested that one website, and I'm going back to it, but it was like you could only support 8 contributors at once, so I didn't think that was very realistic.
Yeah, well, we don't need to solve it now on the show. Well, did you want to go back to that Jitsi question? Because during the, and I just pasted it into the link there, HPR coverage from FOSDEM 2014 Part 5, which was episode 1454, I did get a chance to interview some ex-MMP real-time lounge people. And one of those people was Emil Ivov, who was the who's part of the Jitsi team. Are you familiar with the project at all, anyone?
Yes, played around with Jitsi.
Yeah, and they're doing some very interesting stuff with AV and chat communications over the SIP protocol. You know, if you're familiar with SIP communicator from days of yore, and Jabber and ICQ and Windows Live and Yahoo and formerly Google Talk, so that's a free open source implementation. I think that's also based on WebRTC, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it seems like you've been hiding your light under a bushel until the end of the year, Ken.
So how so?
Well, this particular interview, you know, it seems like, I'm sure about in the next year, but, it seems like maybe something's been parked for a while. Maybe my gross misinterpretation.
No, it was released back in January on 27th of February 2014. So there's a whole series of interviews there, and they're all quite short. I mean, I talked to OpenOffice, Elasticsearch, LibreOffice in that, but the Jitsi thing was quite. Yeah, the whole thing was quite interesting, and I'm wondering if that might be the way to go.
If you check out, it's interesting just to try it out, JIT.SI, that's from memory, so I hope I'm right. And that is a video conferencing WebRTC, so a multi-party video conferencing solution, because they have the back-end server for this. And this is a routed video solution, so you're not putting huge you don't require huge horsepower on that video conferencing server. So you could do audio and video in WebRTC. That would be interesting to play with. I played with it a little bit.
Yeah, something like that would definitely be get us around this problem, I think, because if you have a browser that's accessible and is able to play these videos, well, you don't even need the video format, just the audio format, then everybody just plugs into that, and then we stream that from somewhere or from multiple places, and it gives us the ability to be redundant as well.
But from an accessibility point of view, perhaps it's quite good. No accessibility expert, but I'm assuming browsers are pretty good at that sort of thing.
We would hope so. So this is definitely something that's on the list now, because I would not have been promoting a solution that wasn't accessible if I had known that.
And coming up on, I guess, the last announcement, but accessibility, please take the forefront on that, because I am probably not the best judge right now. My screens are extremely fuzzy, so please jump in, and once we're done, unless there's a huge aftercast, I am going to take opportunity to go to bed and make myself unconscious.
Good for you. Sleep well.
Yep. Do I detect an Irish accent over there?
Oh, yes. I'm from Northern Ireland.
Do I know your people?
I would doubt it. And I've lived a long time, many years, outside Northern Ireland, so I live in Hungary at the moment.
Oh, very good. Are you going to be able to make it across to FOSDEM or not? Or too far?
No, a bit too far for me, but I would love to do that sometime, and some of the guys on the GNU Social, the Fediverse, we'd be talking with it, kind of trying to mull over how we could get together, as a few of us are discussing that.
Yeah, this would be a good time to say something about how Ken's always said, you know, if anybody came to look at you, you know, through association with Ken, we would get on all kinds of lists.
Yeah, that's true. And it's probably a good time now to welcome in the second to last time zone, and that is America Samoa, Midwell, Tall, and Pongo, Bogo, Pogo, Pogo. Happy New Year to all of those. One more hour to go, and then we can put 5150 to bed. So,
please do. That's my goal.
What was that website that you were talking about? GNU Social.
Yeah, well, yeah, a federation of what would have been StatusNet in the past, now called GNU Social. So there's quite a few of us there.
Oh yeah. Go on, carry on.
And I tried to encourage a few of them to come on over here, and I saw them popping in and out just to get a few people on. We thought we could meet up, but apparently not. Apparently I'm the only one that made it.
I'm glad you did. Has that taken off? I used to use Identica quite a lot, and then the switch to Pompio, and the already fragmented community seemed to dissipate.
Yes, well, that's always the problem, you know, with this increased fragmentation. And all of them have got their merits, you know, the Red Matrix and Diaspora and all these different things. I just wish we could federate them together. But the one that seems to be the most lively, or the one that I participate most in, is the GNU Social. So that's quitter.se or quitter.no or fragdev or load average, or there's a whole load of large instances, and then there are, of course, personally hosted instances as well.
Yeah, we did have a show this year on how to set up your own server, and I do, it's something that I would like to do. I really like to have that, but it seems like an awful lot of work, and you know, like setting up your own email server. Technically, it's possible, but you really don't want to be doing it. You know, is that correct or?
No, I don't think for GNU Social, for a man of your skills, Ken, setting up GNU Social would be a bit of a laugh, really.
No. You completely overestimate my skills.
No, lots of people. There's lots of personally run instances now, and that's the kind of the spirit of the thing. That there's a few big ones. The quitter.se is a very large one. But an active community. We talk about HPR there. Some of the people, like Andrew McNallow, have contributed. And it's on my to-do list to contribute. So I will be doing that at some point, because I have listened to many HPR episodes, and it's time to give back a little.
That's it. Now that it's up on the website, you know, you have to... If you listen one show a year, that's all we ask. But a good one there would be just... Yeah, even if it is as simple as apt-get install GNU Social or whatever it is now, a 5-minute show saying this is how easy it is to install, you do this, and this, and then you're live. That would be a good show.
Yeah, well, what we'd thought of is a few of us would get together and maybe discuss something like that, or our early days of tech. You know, so we had considered this and kicked around a few ideas. But I have to get my finger out. And a certain The Love Bug has recorded an HPR episode. I'm just going to humiliate him here. That he has recorded it, but not edited it. So get your finger out, Dave.
Yeah, I have a few of those myself, to be honest. So what's life like in Hungary as far as tech goes, as far as life goes?
Well, I guess the biggest tech news was the supposed internet tax and the furore that created. So that was, you know, kind of a political-related technology story. That caused huge furore in back in November. Seems to have died down now.
Did that get dropped?
Well, it seems to be. I think the government positioned it as they were going to seek responses from interested parties, but I think probably they just put it away on the back burner because it was highly unpopular, and they had a highly motivated and mobile group of people that couldn't be arsed to vote before, but were arsed to go on the street.
And that actually, my friend, sums up the internet for you. Well, yeah, at least they went on the street, which is a good step, but can't be arsed to vote, then you have no right to complain.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like, don't take my torrents away from me, or you know, you could pick your whatever, but you try interfering with people's internet, that's dangerous stuff.
Speaking of taking people's votes away, you're from the north, so you can still vote in UK elections, I guess.
Well, I could, but I don't live there. Like, I haven't lived in Ireland for a long time, so I guess like you in the Netherlands, I can vote in local elections, I can vote in EU elections, but I can't vote in national elections here.
Yeah, I have a funny thing with the Republic is they take your vote away once you live outside of the country, so you're no longer allowed to vote at all. Yes. Not very pleasant.
Well, that's a bizarre situation. So you can't vote in a national election in the Netherlands, and you can't vote in the Republic of Ireland. So you're kind of
screwed both ways. And I don't think it's an issue for most Irish people because Irish people can vote in UK elections. And you know, the majority of people, well, you emigrate to America, you're not going to be able to vote over there because you know you're not registered anyway. Or you're keeping a low profile, so you're officially resident in Ireland, so you could technically vote there. And a lot of other people emigrate to the UK, where the census is based. The UK voting census is based on the 1800 census, at which time the whole of the island of Ireland was considered to be eligible to vote. And after partition, then the South has a reciprocal arrangement with the UK. So it essentially stops it from being a problem for anybody else.
Yes, well, it does solve that problem. I guess there is such an enormous Irish community within the UK now.
So, Ken, I don't know, as an expat, I don't know if it's the right word, but you still get to vote in Irish elections?
No, that's the point. In most EU countries, well, the EU countries have agreed to this freedom of movement thing. So I can vote in local elections here in the Netherlands. So I can vote for my local town council, I can vote in provincial elections, but I can't vote for the national parliament in the Netherlands. But I can vote for the European election for my local candidate in the European elections. So that all sounds very well and good. And the logic behind that is because in nearly all other countries in the EU, people are required to vote in their national elections based on their citizenship. So if you're an Italian citizen, you actually get fined if you don't vote in Italian elections, and you have to do that remotely. Now, in Ireland, traditionally, I understand where it came from, because they started issuing passports to as many people as possible, and there are more Irish citizens than there are, I think, three or four times. There's a huge number of people outside of Ireland who have a passport, and they don't want those people all of a sudden deciding to vote on local issues, so they took the vote away.
Now, I'm interested, and it's probably outside your province. Where would you have stood on Scottish independence had you had to vote?
On the sideline. Well, I think it would have been interesting, as an interesting political thing. I think both sides were saying a lot of... I have no issue. It's for a start. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other. My view is we're all EU citizens, and we should actually all be global citizens, I guess, and act responsibly towards each other. but you know, come by. Yeah. But from from a Scottish point of view, I think it brought up a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, you could have had a situation where if you were driving to the Republic from the Netherlands, you would go through the euro into the pound, up to the euro as you go to Scotland, take the ferry over to Northern Ireland, back to the pound, take the back down to the Republic, and you're using the euro again. But to be honest, a lot of the stuff about, oh, you know, they'll have to reapply to go into the EU, that was complete FUD, to be honest, because they're already EU citizens, so you can't just take citizenship away from 5 million people, you know. So, yeah, but I don't know. What will be more important and will be more interesting is the UK referendum on entry into the EU, and that will have severe impacts on everybody.
Well, yeah, I think connections to the UN, the United States, has far-reaching repercussions.
From the point of view of Ireland, if the EU, if the UK leaves the EU, then Ireland has 50% of its exports going to the UK, and you know the other half is going to the EU, and Ireland's in the euro, and yeah, it would be very, very strange. Then there would be this border, then the border would be back. So yeah, would be odd.
Well, this is something we talked about. If there had been Scottish independence, you know, most of the offshore oils, offshore of Scotland, we get in the same situation we have with Iraq. You know, they're all of a sudden the Brits have no money at all. They still retain all the guns, so you'd have to figure that out.
So, what do you do for a living? Or is that too personal? Are you
I am a computer software consultant and a farmer. I thought everybody knew that.
And Chuck Holm?
I'm an engineer, so.
What type of engineer?
Well, an electronic engineer, so. I don't particularly want to go into who I work for, but I'm an electronic engineer.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you know, Ken, if you scroll back about an hour before you jumped in, we had a rather spirited conversation about Monsanto.
Yeah, I'll hear it on the on the stream.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Since I came back this afternoon, I have not been particularly useful updating the pad or my own schedule. I'm sorry.
No, I'm doing that. That's fine. You wouldn't expect you to take responsibility for the whole lot. So yeah, only a few more minutes, and then we're done. Then I can start posting. I have the third show ready to edit it, just ready to convert it now, and then we'll have the Monday show ready, and then we're good to go.
Forty-five minutes, and we can drop it all in Marcus's lap.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Just thinking, you encode HPR to Speak's codec, and not the Opus codec. Anybody ever raised that with you, or just what's your thoughts?
My thoughts are, yes, we could encode to Opus. I actually have an episode written in the notepad on this subject. From the point of view of HPR, the reason we do Speaks is Speaks was the codec that was out at the time. A lot of people have AUG. The support for audio players for Opus is not there in physical hardware audio players yet. So therefore we would need to maintain an AUG string. We also need to maintain the MP3 stream because for freedom hating devices. And we have the Speak stream for low bandwidth users who wanted that. But then it becomes, well, we have Opus, which is going to replace AUG and Speaks, but we can't replace AUG because it's built into hardware devices, and therefore it's between Speaks and Opus. So what do you want to do?
Yes, but does any hardware device support Speaks?
No, but anybody who would be on a low bandwidth connection that could download Speaks. Well, there are, yeah. Speaks is a NOG format, so it should be played by anything that's able to play OGG, in theory. To be honest, I think only 3 or 4 people ever download the streams, and I suspect quite a lot of them are me testing it.
Yeah, Opus is very good. You know, we have a sort of a cast of our own, and we encode to Opus. I don't think people download it, but it's amazing quality for the size of the file. Absolutely astounding.
Yeah, we do have a situation where we're, you know, we've got half a terabyte of files in any particular format. So if we were to do that, then we're, you know, going with cap in hand back to Anonymous Host again to Josh. Can we have even more disk space to put another format up, you know?
Well, while we're talking about the end of this year and the speaking chocolorm, if Dude Man, who is primary on diet and stuff, were he to hear me right now, he would probably have a coronary, because what I've been doing the last couple of days as a bachelor and in my house, and you know, I am certainly going to die from vegetable problems and scurvy and all that. But since I have this thing set up, I bought a spiral cut ham from Kroger, which is you guys won't know that, but it's a local grocery concern, and it's not very good, but it does give me the possibility when I do get hungry, I just reach my hand in and grab a couple scrolls from the from the spiral cut ham. And I, you know, today I didn't have much time to do anything else, so this is my dinner tonight. And I welcome any criticism, because this is not a good way to live. But I'm doing without any kind of vegetation, and just ripping pieces off of a pig is not a good thing.
Chalk, what you mentioned, a podcast. What podcast is that?
Oh, we do a little minority podcast called the Duffercast, which is basically just having a laugh amongst a few of us that have met up on the Fediverse.
The Duffercast. God, it's been a while since I heard that. Can you post a URL for that and I'll add it to the show notes?
Sure, sure. Well, Duffercast.org.
Duffercast.org, this is. And what do you talk about over there? Half Danish, half cowboy. King Charles Gustav, trusty testicles. I'm talking about shite tonight. I'm talking absolute shite tonight. Very good.
You discover if you like nonsense, there's a lot of nonsense. There's a bit of a techie angle to it. A bit of reminiscing about old technical things. To get on the show, you have to be over 40. So if you're not over 40, you're not on the show.
That's discrimination, my friend.
Yep.
Unfortunately, I'm able to join.
From the description, it sounds like a golfing podcast almost.
Well, maybe in the United States, Duffer tends to be used for the golfing, meaning that Duffer is kind of, how do we describe it, an old bumbling idiot. We're poking fun at ourselves.
In that case, I definitely should check into it.
Incius is also part of this. He's a contributor here as well.
Yes, and McNallow and...
And the Love Bug.
Yeah.
You look like Samuel Beckett or somebody like that.
It's not exactly my real photo. I don't quite look like that yet.
That was classic. Very, very, very good. Well, okay.
Please go and have a listen. Anyway, I'll invite you on sometime if you want to talk absolute shite for the night.
As if I could. I think we need to maintain a list of podcasts and stuff. You should put a sample podcast into the stream, for sure. Take your best work.
No, what we thought about was, and I don't know what you guys think, but we thought of, like, reminiscing, do a special podcast just for HBR, so it's only for HBR, and just reminisce about old technology or our first technology. Because, you know, I go back to using TCP/IP in the 1980s over radio. So, you know, a whole lot of old crap we could talk about.
Yeah, yeah, please do. That's right up our street. Absolutely excellent. I'd like to get more podcasts. I'm also quite interested in radio communications now, so more about that sort of stuff. And I also want somebody to step up and do a introduction to electronics segment, you know, what's a resistor, what's a capacitor, you know, the basic Ohm's law, that whole shebang. If nothing else, then a refresher course.
Uh-huh.
If there are only electronic engineers around that could do that for us. No pressure, no pressure. MI Bill. MI Bill. C prompt. Back off there, back off. How is purchasing Linux laptops in Hungary? Easy to do or not possible at all?
No, it's quite actually easy to purchase a laptop with nothing installed. I'm using some old Dell thing, and when I bought it, I thought I was buying a PC with no Windows installed, but it came with an Ubuntu installed on it. So it wasn't that hard. So you see lots of them that are advertised with FreeDOS installed.
Yeah. I had, in the Netherlands, I wanted to get a new laptop. So, well, making a short story long, for if I can. There was a lovely little Lenovo. I have a very specific requirements. I want a keyboard with the page up, page down, and arrow keys on it. And I wanted to get a... And that was it, pretty much. So I went to one of the shops and got a little Lenovo thing that folds over. It had a touch screen and everything. But it had, you couldn't install any other operating system on it than Windows 8.0.
Oh dear, sounds like a challenge then.
Oh Lord, Lord, don't go into it. So I emailed the company, Lenovo. Well, first of all, I contacted Lenovo technical support in the Netherlands, and they surpassed the reputation of technical support. Technical support help desks people are, Dutch people are known to be rude in general. People will say it's, if you take a straw poll of people in the Netherlands, Dutch people will say no, they're direct, and all foreigners in my straw poll 100% have said no, it's not direct, it's simply been rude. And these people took it to the limit. They were the absolute most rude people on this planet, Lenovo technical support in the Netherlands. That said, one or two, I called three times, two people didn't know, one guy was okay, but there was one person who was absolutely extremely rude on the phone, and adamant that the fault was all mine and that what they had shipped was working correctly. So I contacted Lenovo support in the UK, and we stepped through what I was trying to do, installing UEFI on it, and they said yes, you know, the warning that as soon as you install another operating system, we're not supporting the operating system, we'll continue to support the hardware. Yes, I accept that. Okay, that's fine. But no, the laptop should support it, and it doesn't. Okay, so that was fine. I had that on a piece of paper. I brought it back to the place where I bought it from, and those guys, you know, one of these, it was MediaMarkt actually in the Netherlands, and I was expecting a big rigmarole from them, but I explained it to them, and the guys were going, I said, here's three USB discs. One has got Windows 8.1, and the other's got Fedora, and the other's got Ubuntu. And here's my laptop, my Dell laptop, and you can see that it's booting UEFI, and you see it's not booting these ones. So they said, hey, can we borrow those? And they went over to their own laptops, booted UEFI, and go, yeah, mine boots. And then Yep, they sent it back to Lenovo. And Lenovo returned it, saying the battery, they replaced the battery, congratulations, but it still wouldn't boot. And then I eventually got on to Lenovo customer support, and I'll just read what they said. So the UK said, Lenovo UK does not restrict anything on the unit. You can install any operating system on the unit. However, we only support the original configuration of the unit. If you provide need any thingy, please contact us. So I sent Miss van der Kleiner, who is the PR person for Lenovo, and I said I'm producing a podcast and associated blog with my experiences related to the Lenovo IdeaPad Flex 10, and in order to ensure the accuracy of my report, I would like to confirm the following the validity of the following statement. Lenovo have shipped the IdeaPad Flex 10 without the ability to boot other operating systems, restricting the owner to running only the installed Windows 8.0 operating system. To which they supplied, Dear Ken, I've followed up with your inquiry and I can share the following with you. The first wave of the CPU model from Intel can only support Windows. This is not a Lenovo design. All our products of this waves were not able to support anything except Windows OS. After this wave, the Flex 10 will support other operating systems. So that's the official word from Lenovo. So, that was enough to get me my money back from MediaMarkt. And then I decided, well, feck this. We need to put our money where our mouth is. And if we're buying laptops, they must be with Linux installed. And then I checked how many laptops. So I found a laptop in there and I said, in the shop, and I said, I want to install Linux on this. Will you support it? Yes or no? So they contacted the company and said, no, we won't, but you can buy another hard disk, swap that hard disk out and bring it back in. So I said, no, I'm only going to buy laptops with Linux on it. And after contacting every single supplier, only one, which was Dell, was able to sell me a laptop with Windows on it, or with Linux on it.
A sad story.
Yes. Eventually, I was able to get a laptop with FreeDOS from Germany, which meant from Acer. Which meant I had to get a English keyboard. And the laptop is designed such that everything is mounted onto the base of the keyboard. So I had to take this laptop apart, take everything out, disassemble it completely, the screen, the hard disk, everything, take it out, put in the new keyboard base and screw everything back to the base of the laptop. So it was a complete... I've done a video on it. It's not as scary as it sounds, but... it was a complete saga. And the laptop is brilliant, except for the fact the keyboard is crap. Oh, it's brutal.
So that was a Dell you ended up with?
No. It is an Acer. So an Acer Troublemate. And the Dell is nice, but it doesn't have any arrow keys for a start. And secondly, I'm not going to shell out $4,000 for the laptop that sell Google employees.
I'm surprised that you couldn't go into MediaMart. If I go into MediaMart here, I can guarantee you there'd be a, 20% of the laptops would have FreeDOS. It's very common here.
It could be related to the levels of, quote, piracy, unquote. You know, the ability for, I don't know. Maybe there's not enough coverage, most of the laptops. Maybe they expect people to pirate their copy, is what I'm trying to say.
Or the sensitivity to price, this being a little bit further east, they're looking for lower prices, less specs. You know, a lot of very, very low spec computers are for sale here.
Yeah, exactly.
But then again, me being a cheapskate, I don't mind using a low spec computer. What does it matter?
There's nothing wrong with this laptop aside from the keyboard, to be honest with you. And it's running UEFI, and my hard disk's encrypted, and everything works. And to be honest, I had a my Dell laptop in work. I had Kubuntu on that, and the whole thing just of a day, just the whole thing just stopped working. Any X applications were running. You could see the processes running, but they weren't appearing on the screen, and you couldn't restart them. And it was a persistent problem. So I ended up for the last week running everything on the small little dinky laptop with two big monitors plugged in, you know, via the HDMI connection on it. Sorry, one big monitor with the HDMI connection on it, and, you know, a real keyboard and a real mouse. And to be honest, the thing is flying. I'm really, really happy, aside from the crappy keyboard.
Well, I had the keyboard problem as well. I wanted to buy an English keyboard, but they said, okay, that'll be whatever, 10,000 forints more. And I thought, no, I'll just pretend it's English. So I have a Hungarian keyboard on this computer, and I just pretend my fingers know where the keys are, so I pretend it's English.
To be honest, after the saga of changing the keyboard, I was very close to getting some Tippex and just Tippexing the letters over, you know. I think it would be cool. I don't know why somebody doesn't, you know, just get a... that you can buy a transparent film of stickers that you can stick onto a keyboard. And that would be the problem solved for the majority of people, you know.
Well, you're right, because there's a lot of people typing in multiple languages. Have you ever seen a keyboard that's in Hebrew? You know, there's multiple, or a Russian keyboard. There's multiple layers. People want to type in English and Russian.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, I would have been happy, you know, just sticking on the letters. But I thought, well, I'm going to do this as an exercise for HPR as a show sometime, and that was as good a time as any. Now that we're struggling for content here at the end of 26 hours. So, yeah, but, you know, when you look at the keyboard, the actual keys are just stuck on bits of plastic anyway. I can't imagine it would be that much, that rocket science, just to get a transfer and peel off the stickers. The kids do have those sticker things that you buy to decorate Christmas cards and stuff, you know, with gold letters. So I was very, very close to just, you know, sticking them on and be done with it.
Well, I just pretend. Just pretend that it's, you know, the hash key is where the hash key is.
Do you still use the pound sign UK keyboard, or have you switched to the US dollar sign?
No, I always use a US. I always have used a US, so my fingers know where the things are.
Yeah, and when I did, we're in Ireland, we always had the UK keyboard for the pound. But then that was back in the day of the pound, so fair enough.
The other interesting thing about keyboards is they're such filthy things. A laptop keyboard must be disgustingly filthy dirty.
Absolutely. Every day in work, I take my keyboard and turn it upside down and shake it. And I just found out yesterday that, you know, everybody in the office thinks I've just got all this rage during the day, have these several rage fits. No, I just want to clean my keyboard.
Yes, I lost €1 in there somewhere.
Yeah, very good. But you have a sandwich or something, and just...
Well, yes, or an orange juice or something gets in there, and you end up with sticky keys. No fun.
One of the chaps in work just spilled a coffee over his Dell. You know that expensive Dell one that they have. I can't think of the high-end laptop. It just gunged the whole thing up.
I must say, a lot of the fun I've had is playing with old computers, getting various Linux, you know, Puppy Linux or whatever, and you can get it to run on any old crap hardware, and it's given me great pleasure over the years just playing with these things.
Yeah, I've done a bit of that, actually. I need to do a little bit more. My daughter's laptop, the screen has just suddenly stopped working. Comes on bright and then just stops. I wonder, do I need to take the thing apart or what? I also have a Chromebook here. It's one of the C7s, the original ones. And it's got that nice keyboard on it as well. It's got a hard disk, got lots of RAM. But the image on it is, it's got that boot image from Google Chrome. And she was using it for ages. And then one of her friends came in. And, you know, there's a 20-second wait where it goes, are you sure you don't want to go into Chrome? And then one of her friends came in and hit the space key, which reset the laptop back to Google Chrome, wiping out all her work for the last 2 months all our pictures and everything. So it was a very, very, very sad day that day.
Oh, dear. Dear, dear, dear.
Well, there's an... I should not say... I was listening to Bad Voltage, and I think they... mentioned until I didn't realize what they were talking about, but they're a set of scripts that you can run in Chromium to allow you, or Chrome OS, that allows you, you know, if that without overlaying Chrome OS with a whole new Ubuntu operating system, but you're using the kernel, and you can actually access normal Linux applications in Chromium.
Yeah, that's correct, and that's what we did. But there's burnt into the BIOS of the machine is in later versions, in earlier versions and later versions, there's a physical switch that you can do, either a DIP switch, a physical switch, or a application that you can run that will turn it off so that it doesn't prompt you to go into Chrome OS. But on this version of Chrome OS, you can go in and you can set it so that it will boot by default into Ubuntu, or Ubuntu as it's called. And that runs Ubuntu, and it uses the it copies over the kernel from Chrome OS, so everything works, all the Wi-Fi, everything works fine. And that's fine, but there is one limitation, and that's at the beginning, as the machine boots up, it gives you a warning that you're running in developer mode. And if you want to get rid of that warning, you need to hold down Control and D to go into developer mode, or you need to wait 20 seconds. So my daughter was well used to either waiting or pressing Control D and going into her Linux environment. But one of her friends comes over, and they know all about computers, and they want to go onto YouTube. And so they saw this message: you're in developer mode. To return out of developer mode, press the space key. So all they read is, and this is in Dutch, they're reading, and is they see press the space key, and they press the space key, and that then does a complete factory reset of the laptop, restoring it right back to the original Chrome verified boot chain, wiping out all her system, essentially. So then we stopped using a Chromebook after that, and I switched her over to a old HP laptop, which she was using quite a lot, and then the screen just stopped working on that.
Well, I mean, this has been my point. You can buy... Yeah, everybody says... Well, you can buy a thing for $200, $300 for a Chromebook is, and you know, I can buy a laptop the same size with a multi-core processor, no problem for what they want for a Chromebook.
And basically, what I'm saying now to everyone is, if you want to buy a Chromebook, it's fine. You're buying a Chromebook. You're not buying a GNU Linux system. You're buying a Linux system that runs Chrome, which is fine. Don't get me wrong, that's what you're doing. But if you want to support the Linux operating system, then you need to buy a machine that has Linux on it, or you need to buy a machine that you can put Linux on it, that it doesn't come with another operating system. That's the only way that we will get more support for operating systems. In fact, I think here in the Netherlands, the whole situation as regards to getting hardware has actually gotten worse. There are more people running Ubuntu, running Linux, GNU Linux. I see them everywhere. I see them, you know, as I go through work. A lot of the contractors now are running Linux on their machines. A lot of the engineers are running Linux on the machines. So we have more Linux users, but they're still buying Windows machines and putting Linux on it. So it's time that we need to say, right, I'm going to take the hit, whatever that hit is, if it's a financial hit, or it's a inconvenience hit, like I took, or it's some other hit, where you write to the companies and say, I want you to explain why you don't have a Linux operating system. I want you write to your politician and you say, why can't I buy a operating system without Windows? Why is there a monopoly here? You write to your monopolies commission. You ask why there's a monopoly in this market, why you're not monitoring this. And you get off your arse, basically, and you do something about it.
Well said. Well said. And Johan V, this plays to an HPR episode that Johan V created maybe a couple of weeks ago on why to use Linux, and he dispelled a few myths. But I think having it delivered, having Ubuntu or whatever delivered on some kind of laptops, it would be a really, really huge step forward.
Absolutely. That was a brilliant episode. I was particularly... he nailed that on the head. It's... I think it's a really, his episode personified the how I feel about Linux now. It's not this wonderful thing that is bug free and more secure and whatever. I mean, you just have to look at Heartbleed and Shellshock and all the rest of it to see that. But if it's something that we want to run, we are now people who are earning livings using this operating system or whatever. So we should be able to say the power of the book. If you live in a capitalist country, then let capitalism work its course. And you say, as a consumer, I'm not going to purchase your product unless it comes with what I want on it. I'm not going to purchase your phone unless I'm able to get access to the BIOS. Very simple. We have to... You can't be... companies will do whatever it is that will sell their stuff. They don't care. If you ask for it, they will sell it. If enough people ask for it, they will sell it to you. It's as simple as that. That's why Linux has been shipped on servers and not been shipped on laptops. Simple end of story. Hold on. That was a bit of a rant.
No, it was well said. Well said.
I actually need to come on to your show and do the ranting over there because I need to be representing HPR here all the time. So I
don't worry. We tried to promote it, the HPR New Year's show. So we're trying to do our bit.
If you've got a promo, by the way, give it over to us, and I want to put the promos for podcasts at the end of our shows, so mix it up a little bit.
Will do. Had a similar problem with my Generation 1 Nexus tablet this week, Nexus 7 tablet. It was booting up and just giving it the spinning circles forever, so I tried a few things looking it up and cleared the cache, and then... Nothing would work. It would just spin those circles until it ran out of battery. So I did a factory reset, or went back to the factory image. Yeah. But the problem was, I lost all the kind of work specific things. I had a whole load of certificates.
Oh!
So it took a while, and. Trying to get into work by VPN to get certificates back onto it. That was a right pain in the neck.
Yeah, I can completely understand. That's why I store a lot of that stuff now on an encrypted... I have a encrypted disk that I send around the place. And I store quite a lot of stuff now in Git, all my configuration files and stuff like that. Stuff that... The thing about my... Well, not Linux, but... Let's talk about Linux. The thing about Linux is, when I install it, it just runs and runs and runs for years, so I don't need to reinstall it, and then all of a sudden you reinstall and you realize there are 4,000 applications that you use every day that have weird weird configuration settings that you need to copy over. But I really would like the whole phone thing is bugging me, not having a good phone.
Well, there's alternatives coming. So you hear people talking about selfish and... but you know, nothing is very, very. How can we put this? Nothing very well developed. Just or Ubuntu phone might come early in the new year.
Yeah, but they don't have the money to push it. Firefox don't even have the money to push it the way they need to. Google were able to do it because they were able to push a free alternative operating system onto people, and it was in people's interest. They had the code. It was a win-win situation for everybody, and Google paid a lot of money for that. That, you know, people shouldn't underestimate the amount that's costing them doing the Android operating system.
Although perhaps I was a bit naive. I kind of had high hopes for Firefox OS. I thought web applications, HTML5, it might open up a whole range of new things, but didn't really happen.
Yeah, I hope it will. I don't think it's over yet, but yeah, that's really where I wanted to go. And I had my hands on one at FOSDEM last year. A lovely little phone, and I've been doing an audit of all the stuff that I use on my phones, and it's not a lot. You know, it's fairly limited. What I want to be able to make phone calls and do my calendar and that sort of thing, all which could be within the bounds of a phone, and it would be cool to be able to run that. It's a pity they didn't work with Ubuntu on that, or Ubuntu didn't work with Firefox OS. You know, consolidate some of the work.
I wish we would follow some of the kind of principles in Linux. You know, have the variety of a Windows manager. I want like OpenBox. I don't want animations. Doesn't matter to me. Give me longer battery life. But give me the applications I want, but not all this whiz bang. You know, zooming windows around. I don't care about that.
Absolutely, couldn't agree with you more. But I also couldn't agree with you more on the fact that I hate animations on stuff. I hate animations on stuff anyway. It's because, like, look at me, a beeping dishwasher, another thing that I get annoyed at. But anyway, to finish your point, but I couldn't agree with you more in that if people do want that, they should be able to turn it on. That should be their right as well. You know, a variety of window managers, a variety of customize it however you want, or, you know, a KDE for a phone, or a GNOME desktop, or a GNOME Palm top for a phone.
And isn't it horrific to think of all this hardware that's sitting in people's drawers? Like, I've got just, you know, 3 feet away from me, there's a couple of Android phones in a drawer that could be used if there was software suitable, you know, to run on that old hardware.
Yeah, it's, and you know what's scary? I've got a phone that's nearly 2 years old. I consider it my new phone, right? And I can't run anything on. Already applications are starting to be grayed out on the F-Droid thing, that you're not running Android, whatever, whatever, whatever. And also on F-Droid, why? And unfortunately, I can't update the phone because it's locked in. But I'm not going to make that mistake again. My next phone will be open, but I don't know which way to go because there's no choice either. It's like you need to buy an open phone. The one-to-one one sounds pretty okay, I think. It's the closest thing now.
Yeah, I wish there was better choices, but there just isn't really. But hey, we can do some of it. We can get a little bit. I would hate to be locked into the Apple kind of world. Not because it's bad hardware. I think that's crap. People saying it's good hardware. It's just I don't want to be locked into their ecosystem, to use the cliche.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I say you couldn't agree with you more or not.
Stop agreeing with me. That's not good. Disagree.
Disagree, yeah. We had Nokia phones at work, yeah. And the choice of it was a Nokia or a Palm, or, well, not a Palm, but a Raspberry. And when the iPhones came in, she said, yeah, we can also offer you an iPhone. And, no, it's okay. I'll just have a bare SIM card and use my own. You sure you don't want? It's an Apple iPhone. Yeah, I know. Thanks.
Thanks, but no thanks.
And I just resurrected Nokia. Nokia 5110. And it still works.
My wife has one of these old Nokia phones, but the battery in it lasts forever because she uses it to talk mostly. Not like I do, but. It was a very good phone with a very long-lasting battery.
They never died, and you could drop them from God knows how high, and they would never die. That was brilliant. It's such a pity what happened to that company in the end. Especially with the N900 and the N800 before it. You know, they had like they were so close to having a touch screen smartphone there. But because they wanted to keep development separate from the mobile division, you know, the mobile guys would come in and trounce all over their thing. They never put a GSM chip in it. And then when the N900 came out, it was too late. So, yeah. If and the big knife killed the cow, you know yourself.
It is sad to think. I'm sure, what do the people in Finland think of the situation with Nokia now? We had a Nokia factory here in Hungary, and it's closed down. Nokia R&D here, I believe, closed down.
Yeah, it's terrible. And it's not like there's hope on the horizon, you know. I think Ubuntu or Canonical were very ambitious about their phone project, and I don't know if that's going anywhere either.
I wish them all the best. I would love Absolutely. To see it a success.
Sorry, I should be going against what you're saying here, but no, yeah, I would love to see them succeed. I would love to have another option, but I'm afraid it is not looking good. All is not well in the city of Denmark.
So how long is there to go now?
5 minutes and we're done.
Well, I'll hang in there. My stomach's beginning to rumble. I have to maintain my svelte figure, you understand?
I do. It's a requirement. So do you have any Irish pubs over there that are worth mentioning? Or do you not do that thing?
There are Irish pubs. There are Irish pubs in Budapest. No, actually, but it just reminded me. I'm thinking of a BBC News article where they tried to find the most unusual Irish pubs or places with Irish pubs. And there was one in Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. Personally, Skopje in Macedonia. That's the weirdest Irish pub I've found so far.
Yeah? How so? Why is it weird?
It was just weird because I came out of the hotel in Skopje, small city, Macedonia, you know, southern Balkans, and I'm going for a walk, just a walk around the city, and I come around a corner and find an Irish pub in the middle of Skopje.
Yeah. There's an Irish pub here in town, and it's like one of these ones where you can go to buyanirishpub.com and have them ship it over in a container. It's just brutal.
Yeah, it looks nothing like a pub in Belfast. It looks absolutely nothing like it.
Yeah, but I to be honest, I don't know if you've read McCarthy's Bar at all, but as he says there, you know, they whether an Irish pub. Yeah, an Irish pub doesn't need to look like an Irish pub to be an Irish pub, you know what I mean? It's, if the crack is there, good and well. If it's not, then you can put as many leprechauns around the place and it'll still not be an Irish pub, you know?
Yeah, well, a lot of pubs in foreign countries, that's what they think. They have to put lots of signs on the wall and old knickknacks or whatever, you know, whatever they think an Irish pub looks like. They've got a plaster in it.
Exactly, yeah. The best Irish pub in Amsterdam is McDonald's, and it just looks like it's got an Irish flag outside to give people a hint, you know. But other than that, it's pretty much designed like a Dutch bar, so fair enough. Right, we're getting close to the end of this, my friends. Let me just connect to the machine and restart the streams. 50, are you awake? Yoo-hoo, 50. I think we lost 5150 at the end. Oh no, he's on mute. Okay, well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, 26 hours later, as we welcome Baker Island and Holland Island into 2015, welcoming the entire planet into the new year, this is the end, my friend. The end. Thank you very much for joining the HPR show, and I would just like to go down to the list of people that we would like to thank. First of all, for providing services on the Mumble server, I'd like to thank John Newstetter for doing that for us. Big help having the Mumble there available as a service to the community. For providing the HPR VPS and for the HPR site and for all the upgrades and all the support, I'd like to thank Josh Knapp from anhonesthost.com. And we do have a 15% discount there for all HPR listeners. And I just read in the chat that there are quite a few people who've got VPS services in there, and their experiences with Josh has been as good as mine. I'd like to thank Kevin Wisher for all the work that he did setting up his stream. And if you want more about them, go to linuxlugcast.com. and they also do a live streaming service, and they have a Logcast where you can come on every month and ask questions. It's also a very good show. Then I would like to thank Russ Woodman K5 Tux for providing the Etherpad instance and putting that together for us at the last moment. It's really, really handy for doing all the scripts and stuff. I would like to thank 5150 for making it through the show so far. It has been... I haven't been able to get on because as long as I would have liked, because of the fact that I need to work. I think the first 26-hour show that we did well happened to be at a weekend, so everybody was off and available. So I think we probably need to pare it down a little bit next year if we're doing it down to maybe just 12 hours starting from 6 and running till 6 in the morning, and then have a pre-show and after-show if that works out. Just, you know, takes a little bit of pressure off people. And I would also like to thank my wife for putting up with the amount of hours that I've been in here doing the stuff for HBR last month. It's been quite a lot of time on setting up the stuff for the New Year show and also doing the uploads. So mostly I would like to thank everybody who contributed to the show this year and come on, and it's actually really nice to know that when you put an event like this on, people do step up to the plate. They come in and they share their opinions and they chat and they do stuff. And I know I wasn't a particular big supporter of putting on this event, but to be honest, after listening in on the stream as a participant rather than a host, I really think it's something that does have value and we should continue to do, albeit maybe a little bit less, just 12 hours instead of the 26 hours is a bit madness. And I would especially like to thank the people who contributed HBR episodes last year. There were 261 episodes contributed last year, and that's a lot of episodes. You know, you just I said it before and I'll say it again, it takes a lot of shows to keep HBR going, and we produce original content, and that, you know, that's all we do. I'd like to thank Dave Morris for stepping up to the plate this year. Really has helped me out an awful lot with the Internet Archive stuff, with technical support, and taking over the comments, and he's done a lot of work on making the community news scripts there for making the community news something that we can just go and sit down and start talking about rather than having to work an hour or two every Saturday beforehand to make that work through. I would really also like to thank everybody, especially who has contributed shows and is contributing shows. It has been, we do have a lot of shows, but the quality of shows this year has been absolutely excellent, especially our first time hosts have come in with lots of new content and stuff. And we've got a lot of great interviews from people. And I look forward to another great year here on HBR. And with that, I will thank you all for joining and tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio. Join us now and share the software. You'll be free. Hackers, you'll be free.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.